Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, March 13, 2017. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening over another network, you can would like to ask us a question. You can make a comment. You can. Oh wait, I'm sorry. If you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605. This is a brand-new number, by the way, and I'm sure everybody that's on this call right now knows that, but anybody listening on the recordings, we have a new number. It's 605-475-3250. Let me repeat that. 605-475-3250. Our participant code is 449-389. That's 449-389. Also, you can get this information at nationallibertyalliance.org. Click on our weekly call on the top left side of our page, and all the necessary information is there. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send it to questions, that's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support National Liberty Alliance effort to save America. And also, please support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right. And by the way, we desperately need money. We're just way behind. We're $1,500 over this month, and we had to find other sources to get money and reached in my own pocket to pay the bills. We're asking for everybody to send $5 a month or more. Some people can do 10, 15, 20, whatever, but $5 a month or more, that's all we're asking. And if everyone participated with that, we'd be flowing in the money, we'd be sending out a lot more paperwork, and we'd be doing a lot more work. So please, if you believe in what we're doing, you should be supporting us financially also. We also ask for everyone to give us an hour a week or more. Some people can volunteer a lot of time, and some people can only do an hour a week. But everybody should be participating at least 1 hour a week. We also need to make sure that our leadership is taking or finishing the courses. We've seen some of our leadership is stalling on the courses. Yep, we're watching you. Yeah, so look at you guys. You got to get these courses going. Got to get educated. So anybody taking those courses, leadership is a requirement. So please, let's get those courses going, even if you're moving slow on it. We know that it takes up time, or the civics course is 120 hours, and that's going to take a while for most of us. But the constitutional course is only 8 hours. You could do that in a couple of weekends and get it done. Okay? All right. Tonight's scripture reading is coming from Luke chapter 12, verses 13 through 40. That's Luke chapter 12, 13 through 40, and this is on seeking the kingdom. And one of the company said unto him, Master, speak to my brother, that he divide the inheritance with me. And he said unto him, the Lord said unto him, Man, who made me judge or divider over you? And he said unto them, Take heed and beware of covetousness, of a man's life consisteth not of the abundances of things which he possesseth. And he spake a parable unto them, saying, The ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentiful. And he thought within himself, saying, What shall I do, because I have no room where to bestow my fruits? And he said, This will I do. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, thou hast not as much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, Thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then whose shall these things be which thou hast provided? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself, and is not rich towards God. And he said unto his disciples, Therefore I say unto you, Take no thought for your life, what you shall eat, neither for your body, what you shall put on. The life is more than meat, and body is more than raiment. Consider the ravens, for they neither sow nor reap, which neither have storehouse nor barn, and God feedeth them. How much more are ye better than the fowls? And which of you, which taken thought, can add to this statute one cubit? If ye then be able to do that thing which is least, why take ye thought for the rest? Consider the lilies, how they grow. They toil not, they spin not. And yet I say unto you that Solomon, in all of his glory, was not arrayed like one of these. If then God so clothed the grass, which is today in the field and tomorrow is cast into the oven, how much more will he clothe you, O ye of little faith? And seek not ye what ye shall eat, or what ye shall drink, neither be ye doubtful mind. For all these things do the nations of the world seek after, and your Father knoweth that ye have need of these things. But rather, seek ye the kingdom of God, and all these things shall be added unto you. Fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell that ye have, and give alms. Provide yourselves bags which wax not old, a treasure in heaven that faileth not, where no thief approacheth, neither moth corrupteth. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Let your loins be girded about, and your lights burning. And ye yourselves like unto men that wait for their Lord, when he will return from the wedding, that when he cometh and knocketh, that may open unto him immediately. Blessed are those servants whom the Lord, when he cometh, shall find watching. Truly I say unto you, that he shall gird himself, and make them to sit down to meat, and will come forth and serve them. And if he shall come in the second watch, or come in the third watch, and find them so blessed, are they those servants. And this know, that if the good man of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched, and not have suffered his house to be broken through. Be ye therefore ready also, for the Son of Man cometh at an hour when ye think not. Luke chapter 12, verses 13 through 40. Okay. Let's see. Tonight we're going to talk a little bit about foreclosures, tax and mortgage foreclosures. In the past, we've written some letters. We've tried to help people with mortgage problems and to try to save their homes. We haven't been too successful on that. We've tried to warn the courts tell the courts of the crime and explain to them the crime that was being taken by the mortgage companies. But, of course, they're part and parcel with these mortgage violations on the people by taking their homes. And the whole system is set up against the people to rob them of their homes as soon as they start to fall behind, and in many cases, even when they don't fall behind. Same thing with the tax foreclosures. Anyway, we have started, as most people know, we've started the case up in Albany, New York here, which we've got quite a few cases going into there. And we'll be doing the habeas corpuses that we've already set forward. There's got to be at least 30 of them laying around that we need to, that people are still in jail or people are still lost, don't have their children back. We're going to take those cases into the court. But we're also going to do the mortgage cases. As a matter of fact, we put something together that looks quite easy. It's a one-paper deal. It's a show cause directly into the court. When we started to look at this and reconsider trying to help people with mortgages again, we were going to go through a different process of really a notice and demand and then setting forth for a default and then giving them, the ultimatum. And then take them into the court. But as we were writing the papers, we started to realize, why are we going to go through all this exercise? Why don't we just go right into a show cause? And a show cause brings them into the court, and they have to respond. If it's a mortgage company, and remember, we're not just going after the mortgage companies or the towns, particularly the people that are responsible for doing these things, like the tax collector for the tax foreclosures. And also there is also the treasurer, the county treasurer, that's responsible for the final foreclosure. And they're the ones that sign the paper. No judge's signature ever signs the paper on any of these foreclosures because they try to keep their fingers off of it. And we've seen them pull all kinds of dirty tricks in order to keep their signatures off of that so they don't put themselves at risk. And what we discovered here is to go after the top guy, whoever's responsible for all this stuff. So if we can't get a judge that's responsible for this, and these papers are filed in the court, well, who's responsible? Well, the answer is quite simple. Ultimately, it is the chief judge. It's really the clerk, because the filing of a non-judicial foreclosure should not be permitted. But because it is a non-judicial foreclosure and because the clerk is totally ignorant to the process, the judge is not. And if he is, shame on him anyway. That's his problem. So that's the guy we go after. So we will go after the chief judges in whatever court system it is that is hearing this, whether it be a county court or some kind of a state court. Those are usually the two courts that will hear these cases. And we'll go after the mortgage companies. Now, the mortgage companies, of course, they're regular people, so they've got 30 days to answer. A show cause, the people are permitted 30 days if they're served through the mail, and that's how we'll serve it. We'll serve it through certified mail. And the judges, and a lot of these judges and people, I'm so surprised that they don't know, but these are federal rules. We're in a federal court, and so we kind of understand that they don't know. I've been in federal courts. And I've watched these people squirm, and I've seen the federal judges flog these people, you know, the lawyers that are coming in there from the state courts. They don't read the rules. They don't even read their own rules on the state level anyway. I see the same problem there, too. But these federal judges don't like when you come in and don't look at their rules. And so they don't even know that they've got 60 days. But that's what they do have, 60 days to answer. They think they have 30 days to answer, and they answer in 30. Well, that's fine, too. But generally speaking, they will default. I know the tricks that they play. We've seen this already. They'll try to come in and have the case thrown out. They'll try to find us for no standing. And we're making maneuvers to prevent that. We've already set that stage up. But also the fact of the matter, if a judge tries to throw a case out, he's only going to get one case at a time, but he's not going to get 30 or 40 cases. And he will find himself as a defendant on the defendant's list because we've already warned that judge in our case right now. He's already been warned that this is a common law court, running according to the rules of the common law. So this is a court of record. It's going to be decided by juries, not by an individual. There is no authority for the servant to judge the master. And anything over $20, as the Constitution says, people get a trial by jury. And we are going to be starting indictments here. We're going to be communicating with the new Attorney General up there in Washington, D.C., we will be copying the President of the United States on everything we're doing. From listening and watching, it's more and more obvious to me that he has been reading our stuff. Just by what he's doing and some of the announcements and things I've heard about, but I haven't heard from his mouth yet, is very, very exciting concerning what's happening in the federal agencies and what's maybe happening in the courts. There's getting rid of these U.S. attorneys, which is normal. You know, it's par for the course. But that's what we do need. We need new U.S. attorneys coming in that's going to do the job. And we're going to start going after U.S. attorneys because they're part of the problem. We don't have a particular plan at the moment, but we're going to see how these new attorneys go. We have Parikh, I forget what his other name is, Parikh something. That was the guy that, decided that he wouldn't resign and he wanted the president to fire him. And this just happened, I think, yesterday or over the weekend or something. Just recent. I just heard about it yesterday anyway. And we heard a lot of good stuff about this guy. But he stopped short in a few places. You know, he's been going after this governor here in New York for 3-4 years now, and he hasn't made any real big moves on him. I don't know why. There's plenty out there on this guy. This guy should be in jail. There's no doubt about it. But he has gone after some big people, and he has taken some big people down. But we do need someone who's going to deal with even people as high as the governor. The governor is not above the law. He's just like you and I, and if he breaks the law, he needs to be in jail, at least at minimum, be removed from office. But anyway, we're going to be doing these foreclosure problems, and even people who have already lost their home, Doesn't matter how long ago you lost it. If you lost your home for tax foreclosures or you lost your home for mortgage foreclosures, we will also, we've written paperwork for that too, to bring these people up because they have not given you due process in a court of law. And there isn't even a judge's signature on it. At minimum, a judge's signature should be on it. But people don't realize or know enough that they need to be asking for juries. But it is difficult because they don't hear you. When you walk into the courts, they have their hands on their ears as you're talking. They just will not hear you. And they will not permit you to have a common law court. They will not permit you to have a trial by jury because they know they would lose. That's why. And they get away with it. And there's only one reason why they get away with it. It's because of ignorance. You know, you got to keep the slave ignorant. You can't allow the slave to read and write because then they're going to discover liberty and freedom. And that's where we're at. You know, look at most people I see, they can't write very well. And I'm not talking necessarily in a literal way, though, but it is true that people don't write very well. Penmanship is really severely terrible. And people don't read anymore. They tweet, you know, they don't read books. I mean, of course, some people do, but in general, most people don't. People don't know what their rights are. They think they know what freedom is. They think freedom is the ability to be able to, you know, get up out of their bed and go outside and go where they want and go to work and come home and, you know, go to sleep when they want and do certain things. And they think that's liberty. That's not liberty. You know, even slaves can move around on the plantation. Well, no difference. We're slaves because we're ignorant. We don't know our rights. We don't know our unalienable rights. We don't understand that. And if you don't know your rights, you know, again, I always go back to Jefferson. If a people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen. You can't have liberty. If you say the right words in the court and click your heels, so to speak, you can win. Not really clicking the heels, but, you know, you can win in court if you understand how things work, number one, and how to put, it's almost like a chess game. You know, you got to put that judge really into jeopardy. And because the judge is going to do everything he can to prevent you from winning. If you hire a lawyer, and you know, you generally speaking, you're not going to win there because he's already in the game. There are exceptions to the rules, but even those exceptions to the rules, those lawyers that do try to do something, they eventually could get blocked also, threatened with loss of their license and loss of maybe get sanctioned and everything else. Even though all that is illegal and it's all just, you know, it's corruption, it's RICO, you know, it's real tough. So you really have to learn to represent yourself. And again, this is not rocket science. You really just have to learn the basics. You have to understand your rights, and you have to understand what jurisdiction is, what due process is, and you have to understand the basic process of moving through the courts and read the rules and follow the rules, and as much as possible that you feel that it, you know, it's proper. Sometimes I don't follow their rules because I disagree with them, that they think they're repugnant in some places, and I won't follow them. And we'll, you just have to make your voice known in the court on why you're not going to follow that rule. But I have always noticed in every court case I've ever been involved with, my battle has always been with the judge first. And you spend so much time with the judge, it's like you never get around to the case. Before you know it, you're out outside when you can, outside the courthouse, because they threw the case out. And it takes time to figure it out. But those of us who have figured it out, you know, we can share it with others. And again, we're trying to lead people to understand these things. But it first starts with the civics course, starts with the constitutional course, starts with getting your reading. You know, read the Federalist Papers, read the Constitution very, very carefully, get out your dictionaries, read the Declaration of Independence, understand that that Declaration of Independence is a covenant with God, understand that the Constitution is a covenant with our servants, understand that our unalienable rights is a paper that we, the people, wrote to tell them these are the things you cannot do and shall not do. Understand that anything repugnant to that Bill of Rights, to the Constitution, is null and void, and stand on that process that you're going to, the nullification. Juries must understand the power and the authority of nullification. And when the people realize these things, that's when we'll all have liberty. And we don't need everyone to know it. We just need those who are involved to know it. It's a very small percentage of people just need to know it. And they need to stand up and do something about it. Okay, what I'm going to do, I don't know if I'm going to read all, every word in this thing, but it's not a long paper anyway. This is the longest of the papers of a show clause that we wrote. It has not been perfected yet. I have not articulated it out loud, so there could be some errors in here. I'm hoping to finish this off tomorrow with others to try to go through it for punctuation and final proper, you know, wording. But we're going to kind of push through it and to give people an idea of what's involved in the case concerning a foreclosure. The tax foreclosure and the mortgage foreclosure is the same scam. It's just they use the same ruse on the people. And we've discovered that ruse and laid it out. They cannot answer this paper. They just cannot do it. They've got to default. And if they default in a court of law, then they're going to have to give these people their houses back, or they're going to have to, if they're trying to take the houses away, they're going to have to leave them alone and cease and desist. They got to. They have no choice. Now, of course, they're going to fight tooth and nail to try to have this thrown out of court. I do not think that they're going to be able to do that because, again, you know, we're talking case after case after case after case under the same number. And we're going after these people for not only the fact that they are going, that they are not giving people their due process and that they have changed the courts into jurisdictions unknown. We're going after these people also for conspiracy. Because when we get down to the bottom line on this thing, and these people, and we have to go after them, and we have to do an indictment. That's what we're going to do is an indictment. And we're going to go after them for RICO, and we're going to go after them for conspiracy, and we're going to go after the judge in that courtroom, who is the magistrate of the court, who is just the administrator of the court. He just signs the papers and makes everything official. That's all he does. He's the traffic cop. He doesn't get to decide. He doesn't get to make decisions. He can't do a summary judgment. The only summary judgment he can do is when we tell him to do a summary judgment to make a default because these people didn't respond and make the order and order the sheriff to go out and make sure justice is done and get to these people back their homes or leave these people alone. And that's how it's going to happen. We're going to have a lot of people trying to say, oh, we shouldn't have to listen here because this is a court out here in New York and they're in Jersey or in Texas or in California or Montana or somewhere. Well, no, this is more than just a, first of all, it's a federal case. As soon as you violate someone's unalienable rights, it makes it a federal case. Second of all, this is connected. It's something happening across the entire nation. Even laws are being written, statutes, shall I say, codes are being written for non-judiciary, foreclosures, and there's no such thing. You know, how can you take? You know, that's just saying we're not going to give you due process. That's all that's saying. And the Constitution is clear. What are you talking about? You're not giving us due process. And they're all using the same scam, so we can prove conspiracy. They're all using the same scam. Tonight we're going to reveal that scam. A little bit of this does not really, because this is the one we're going to look at tonight, and we're only going to look at one. We're not going to look any more in the future, because it's pretty close to the same. This is maybe an additional page or two than the other, than the tax foreclosure. It's 7 pages, but there's a lot of footnotes and spacing, so it's not going to be that long. But the ruse is the same. That is the key. There is, and the security violations are the same. That is the key. There are certain other violations and things that take place that the mortgage companies do that the towns don't do. And you have in the village, I think it's just basically towns. I'm not sure what the villages actually do foreclosures. I've not seen that happen. All villages are inside towns, and so it's the towns, I think, that handle all this. So it's either a town that actually does the foreclosure. You know, they do all the collection of the taxes, and they turn your name over into the county treasurer, and the county actually goes through the process of collecting all this, and that there is securitizing. And we're going to talk a little bit about that in this paper. And monetizing, I'm sorry. And that we're going to talk a little bit about in this paper. And But it's the same thing that the mortgage companies do. But the mortgage companies, well, actually, the counties do it on a pretty large scale also. You know, we had a one we did up in Greene County here in New York. And I forget if Gerard's on the line, he can tell me the number. I don't know, about 100 cases maybe. Gerard, are you here? Maybe you can pipe in the number if you remember it. I'm just taking a guess. But they put all of the same ones. They wait to a certain part of the year. I don't know if they do it once a year or maybe twice a year. And then what they do is they collect all these homes that they foreclose on for the taxes, and then they auction them off. They take them into court. They put them all in one case, one case number, which is what we've learned from them. That's why we're putting all our cases on one case number. You know, and then they came in and they did all of the foreclosures in one shot without a signature, and you could, it's amazing some of the fraud that they really did in this particular case, because they went far and beyond. In any event, is that your up? They put all these cases together. Well, we're bringing it into federal court now, and guess what? We got 100 and whatever cases going into federal court together because we pulled the whole case together into the court. What's good for one is good for the other. So they got themselves a big dilemma. They've got a lot of people they got to deal with whose homes they've stolen, or have tried to steal anyway. In this case, these case houses have been taken, so they've got a big dilemma. Okay, so again, there's a few things in here that does deal with the mortgage companies but does not deal with the taxes, but generally most of this does. All right, this is a show cause. Again, we the people of the United States of America, under the power and authority of the sureties of peace here in the grand jury, whereas the unified common law, grand juries arose out of we the people in each of the 50 states, which came together to form a unified United States common law grand jury. This was done in an effort to subdue subversion and abuse against the United States of America from enemies both foreign and domestic within our government, against the people and our governments. Because of widespread ignorance and the appearance of a lawful procedure called non-judicial foreclosure without the required filing of a proof of claim, and this is extremely important. Listen very carefully on this paragraph, because all of these, even the IRS operates under the same situation. If you can understand this, you can defend yourself against the IRS too. Okay, because of a widespread ignorance and the appearance of a lawful procedure called non-judicial foreclosure, without the required filing of a proof of claim, that's Form 4490, and fiduciary authority, that's Form 56, for all in rem claims, which must also be filed in the Federal District Court of Jurisdictions, and copies of the same with notice served upon the petitioner as required to comply with the law of the land. We offer a grace period of 60 days for government officials acting under the color of law for correcting their error and for the restoring of the petitioner to their original state, or defendants will be brought before the grand jury for consideration of indictment for conspiracy, subversion, RICO, war against the Constitution, and other charges. Now, in the case of the homes that have already been taken, we've altered the words, of course, a little bit, because there's a past tense here, and they have to give the homes back, so we've changed some words here. But this is key here. People need to understand this. This is how the IRS takes you into court and takes your money and maybe even puts you in jail. This is where all the foreclosures take place. Even at sea, let me repeat this, even at sea, the law of the sea, when they seize a ship at sea and it's brought into port, they have to file the proper papers in port. And both of them are the same thing. They have to file the proof of claim and fiduciary authority over that which they have seized. That is so important to understand. If you understand that, you can understand what they're doing in the federal courts when they take your money through the IRS. You can understand what they're doing in these tax courts or these courts, these kangaroo county and state courts, when they come in and they do the tax foreclosures, or they use the mortgage companies come in and use the county or the state courts in order to take away your homes through tax foreclosure, because the law requires even them at the law of the land. And you can read about this in the federal rules concerning INREM, INREM, that's the process of taking a property that they lay claim upon. They must file the forms. They don't. People don't know about this, so they don't challenge it. Lawyers don't go dare to go here because they will be sanctioned. I've never seen a lawyer go here. And so they take your homes right here from using, and they do not file these forms. That's the breaking of a law. INREM means they're going after the property and not the person, okay? And they don't, you can't find, when at sea, they seize a pirate ship, you can't find the pirates to serve them, to let them know. So it's a process done in REM. In other words, there's no serving upon the pirate because you can't find them. But they could turn up and say, hey, that's my ship, and they can challenge it. They got every right to do that, but they have a certain period of time to do that, to challenge the in-rem process. As a matter of fact, if you go into the federal rules, you will find that after your first day in court, your first hearing, you have 15 days to challenge in-rem process once you're in the court. If you don't challenge in the in-rem process in those first 15 days, you've lost your ability to make that challenge. Of course, that doesn't work in common law. For every for every injury, there must be a remedy. When you discovered that you've been defrauded, it doesn't matter when you discovered that you've been defrauded. From that point forward, you say, "Hey, wait a second! I just realized you scammed me. Oh, too bad you didn't realize it for the past 15 days, and now it's day 16, so it's too late." No, fraud is fraud. A crime is a crime, so you could deal with that. But anyway. In the rules, they write this 15-day rule, which we could beat. We can challenge and beat that rule. Even after being convicted, losing everything you have and going to jail and coming out, you could beat that rule, okay, because you're a victim and you've been defrauded and you've been injured. And common law says what? For every injury, there must be a remedy. It doesn't say it might be a remedy or may be a remedy or could be. No, there must be a remedy. That's the common law. Injury must have a remedy. So you can't beat that no matter where you are. But again, if people expect to be ignorant and free, you can't have your liberty. You need to defend yourself. Don't expect another man to defend you. Get legal counsel. The Constitution tells you can get legal counsel. It gives you the right, the unalienable right. Well, the Constitution doesn't give you the unalienable right. You have the unalienable right to counsel, ultimately. But the Constitution talks about the right to legal counsel, and you have that right to do that. But you should represent yourself. Or if you can't articulate things well, you can get someone to do it for you. It doesn't have to be a lawyer. But you need to control your own case. You need to understand what's going on. I'm amazed when I go into court sometime and I see people, and the lawyers are up there talking. Usually it's the lawyers themselves, but there are cases I've been where the people are there and they're sitting there and they're looking around. And it's like they're oblivious to everything around. I have no idea what they're talking about. They're talking about their property or whatever it is that they're arguing. And the people aren't, they're just lost in la-la land. Keep the slaves ignorant. Remember, that's the key for them to control us. Become educated, understand these things, and all of a sudden the slave is no longer a slave, are they? We have to understand that we're the masters and, they are the servants. But anyway, this REM business is important to understand. How much more, if you have to do it on the sea, how much more on the land? And if it's done on the land and they know where you live and who you are, then the Constitution requires that due process. They have to notify you. But they don't. And how many people have gotten the paper, a notice of lien? And you go down to the county, there is no lien. Well, that's only a notice of lien, Your Honor. Okay, all right. And they move to the other side and the case keeps going. They ignore you. Why? Because you didn't even understand what that meant. The notice of lien is really saying there's a lien in the federal court that's been filed. That's what it means. But that's the fraud because they didn't file it. The lien being filed in the court requires two forms, proof of claim. Google this, Form 4490. That must be filed. Fiduciary authority, Form 56. Google it. That must be filed. Those two forms must be filed in order to seize your property. And because they didn't do that, they have nothing. But they get away with it. That's the fraud. And a fraud is a fraud. A crime is a crime. You can always go back and get it. There is no statute of limitations to common law to begin with because there are no statutes. Isn't that interesting? Which we're going to talk about in the near future, the difference between law and statutes. And people are going to be amazed how they've been living under the thumb of statutes when they really didn't have to. And the only way to defeat that is called nullification. Just say no. For people to become not knowledgeable. Okay, let's move on. Let's see. We the people therefore demand that the defendant show cause by what constitutional authority you act that permits an action in rem against the people without proof of claim and fiduciary authority, or notify this court immediately of your error and withdrawal of your unlawful proceedings that deny due process of the petitioner, and this proceeding will be quashed. So we're giving them the olive branch. They've got the opportunity to fix the problem, do the right thing, or we're going after them. Therefore, let this action first serve to inform the defendants that a nonjudicial foreclosure lacks due process of law, which is an unalienable right protected under the Fifth Amendment, and that any court permitting such a court filing procedure is acting under the color of law, which is a criminal act, and enters into a conspiracy. Nonjudicial foreclosures of laws of any state, to the contrary, notwithstanding. The securitization of real property is illegal, primarily because of antitrust laws violations, constituting specific violations such as usury, fraud, conspiracy, forgery, and robo-signing. And when state and federal legislators provide unconstitutional legislation and state constitutional courts sanction the non-judicial foreclosures by looking the other way, as the victim is robbed collectively constitutes RICO and war against the Constitution. Securitization is the financial practice of pooling various types of collateral debt, contractual debt, such as residential and commercial tax foreclosures under the color of law, or other non-debt assets which generate receivables. And by the way, I'm reading the tax foreclosure. I thought I was going to be reading the mortgage foreclosure. This is a little shorter, so we'll continue with this. I just saw that in that line. Which generates receivables, and selling them to a third party, which may be described as bonds, pass-through securities, or collateralized debt obligations, called CDOs. The process is not as complicated as it might seem at first glance and might be difficult to recognize as a crime, but it should become clear to the local village, town, city, county courts, and the sheriff once they realize that these processes are criminal and use the court and the sheriff to assist in this illegal seizures of homes, often without the realization that they became the instruments of robbery. Clarification. Were the corporate municipalities able to legally foreclose on the property, they would do so by filing the foreclosure in the state court to acquire a judgment and then bring it to the sheriff for collection. A tax foreclosure in rem is an action for the recovery of a thing possessed by another. Let me repeat that because you have to understand the words of what was just said here. A tax foreclosure in rem is, and I quote, an action for recovery of a thing possessed by another. Key word here is recovery. They're claiming past ownership and they're seizing the property that they claim is theirs. They put in a proof of claim, they take fiduciary authority, they write in a fiduciary authority, and they're saying this is ours, we have a right to it, and we're recovering it. You see? How is it that they think that they can recover your home that way? Even the mortgage companies can't do it that way for numerous reasons, which we don't even ever have to argue those points. Some of those points are very difficult for most people to understand until they get a little deeper into how they've set this whole system up of mortgage companies, because the banks have no lay hold on those homes. They didn't stick their hand in their own pocket to put out the money for you to buy the home. They went down to the Fed window and turned in your paperwork, and they pulled out the money, and with that money, or the notes, shall I call it, because it's not real money. Debt really is probably a proper name. Instead of notes, it should say debt. In the dollar, it says dollar, but it's still debt, okay? And then they receive their fee, and their job is over, yet they continue to collect the money as if it's money coming to them. And they pool all this and bring it together. Anyway, they can't make those arguments, and we don't have to make those arguments either. We have to deal with the fact that they have no standing in court. And if you can show that they have no standing in court, they lose, and you walk away with your home. Whether you actually think you owe money or not, you don't owe it no more. Okay. Cannot substantiate, let me go back. A tax foreclosure in rem is an action for the recovery of a thing possessed by another, end of quote, right out of Black's Law. The problem is that municipalities cannot substantiate that they once had some interest in the real property so that they can initiate a lawful recovery action in rem. There are no bureaucrats willing and able on the behalf of the municipality to sign an affidavit of proof of claim and fiduciary authority. Let me repeat that. You go down to the federal courthouse, and you will find these papers have not been filed. You walk into the court. You get copies of the 4490 and the 56, and you hold them in your hand as you walk into the courthouse, and you wave it on to the judge. Where are these papers? How come you take my home away from me? Of course, you're not getting a hearing, and that's the other part of this problem. That's why we're going to do it here the way we're doing it. We're going to assist people from the standpoints of the sureties of the peace, which is the grand jury. The grand jury is making sure we're here to protect the people. That's what our job is as we, the people, in the grand jury. So let me finish reading this. Let me reread that part. This is so important. I'm going to go right back to what REM is, because this is so important to understand this. If you have a home problem being foreclosed on, you need to understand this. A tax foreclosure in rem is an action for a recovery of a thing possessed by another. The problem is that the municipalities cannot substantiate that they had once had some interest in the real property so that they cannot initiate a lawful recovery action in rem. There are no bureaucrats willing and able to, on the behalf of the municipalities, to sign an affidavit or proof of claim and fiduciary authority, which is required to open a lawful court case to provide due process necessary for the lawful seizure of a property in rem. You see, rem can be done and can be won, even in the law of the land. But if they know where you're at, they have to serve you. And they still have to put the papers. And if you're on vacation for a year in the Bahamas or something, and you come back and you find out 9 months ago they took you home and they did it in rem, all you got to do is go down to the federal court, find out where they filed the papers, and you'll find they didn't file no papers, and go back down to the local court. And, well, actually, you need to stay in the federal court, because now it's a due process problem. It's a violation of your Fifth Amendment. And jurisdictional problem. So, you know, you have to go to the federal court because it is a federal issue, and you have to file the papers of a claim of a fraud against you because they took your home. You know, they had every right to take it if they had some claim on it. And, you know, again, a recovery, okay? They have to have the recovery. But they also have to, when they bring your house into the port, so to speak, a little humor here, they bring your house into the port, they have to have the papers in order to take it home with them. More humor. But in any event, the point is they can't take it without the paperwork, even if they have the right to it. But there is nobody that can file that paperwork. What bureaucrat is going to file those papers? And these are sworn affidavit papers, by the way. They have to be a sworn affidavit. They'd be in jail because they don't have the lawful right. So the bar, banks, municipalities, and mortgage cartels devised a plan to bypass due process by lobbying and convincing state legislators who either consciously conspired or, because of constitutional constitutional principles are unbeknownst to them, ignorantly conspired to write unconstitutional, non-judicial foreclosure statutes that proceed in rem, which is a process to seize property without due process, whereas the party seizing the property has a legal claim and fiduciary authority. Such practice moves the presumption of law from innocence until proven guilty to guilty with no opportunity to defend. Because nobody knows how to defend this. No lawyer can defend this. No lawyer will defend this. Turning American jurisprudence on its head, removing opportunity to be heard, and providing absolute control to defraud without consequence by nefarious bureaucrats, of which there seems to be no shortage of, as well as by RICO-governed de facto state courts, which allow the non-judicial foreclosure filing without the signature of a judge. No judge will put their signature on it. Believe me, we have pressed the judge so hard to put a signature on this, and then when it was acknowledged that they would, then we did something else, and then they turned around and they suckered us again. And that was okay, because we thought that they might do that, and we were prepared with that. So it didn't matter to us which way they went, because we knew if the judge put his signature on it, then they were going to take the home, and then we, of course, would bring the judge in along with the rest of the criminals and try them all in the federal courts. The judge didn't put his signature on it. And guess what? He's defrauded anyway, and we still got him. And we're going to get him. That's a private case we're working on right now. In rem, under international law, permits the seizure of property without notification to the property owner. This makes sense and is legal under international law at sea dealing with pirates. But the law of the land, also known as the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution, requires due process for people, for people are not pirates nor at sea. I'll just read the Supremacy Clause. This Constitution, and this is important here now, okay? This is the supreme law of the land. This Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuant thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land. And the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution of the laws or the laws of any state, to the contrary, notwithstanding. And that's Article 6. Congress cannot make laws that would provide for a statutory construction which would negate the unalienable rights of we the people, which is what would be required in order to make a state a non-judicial foreclosure state, and therefore no state can establish a non-judicial foreclosure laws. Such congressional and or state action would negate the following unalienable rights protected by the Constitution and expected to be enforced by the sheriff: the unalienable right to protection of the Fourth Amendment to be secured from property seizures, the unalienable right protected by the Fifth Amendment of due process, the unalienable right protected by the Seventh Amendment to a right by trial by jury, the unalienable right protected by the Seventh Amendment to common law courts. Rights are unalienable and cannot be transferred. Any contractor would pass or hand over an unalienable right is null and void. The burden of proof is on the foreclosing party. All parties to a non-judicial foreclosure cannot prove their case, nor can they prove their right to sell anyone's property without progressing to a final judgment in a court of law. Any court that ignores these facts and or proceeds with a summary judgment becomes complicit to the robbery and violates the victim's right under the color of law, thereby giving reason to move the case for cause into an Article III federal district court for both criminal and civil remedies. White-collar criminals, after establishing unconstitutional statutes, thereby acting under the color of law, devising the following ruse to manipulate our judicial system and our county sheriffs so as to create an appearance of lawful acts while illegally seizing the property of their victims. One, they give notice of the default of the victim to the victim without judicial process. Two, they give a substitution of trustee without judicial process. Three, they give notice of sale without judicial process. Four, they commence public auction without judicial process. Five, they use aforesaid documents to transfer the title without judicial process. Six, they file fraudulent evictions proceeding acting as landlord under the fraudulent title and calling the owner of the property tenant who owes back rent in an unsuspecting village, town, or city court, given the appearance of judicial process. And seven, file the fraudulent judgment with the county clerk to achieve a fraudulent eviction order for execution by the unsuspecting sheriff. We the people find it apparent that most of the constitutional officers are ignorant to the law of the land, as defined in the Constitution for the United States of America, Article 6, and therefore are often unable to determine constitutional violations, which place sheriffs prey to the minions of the subversive bar in jeopardy of violating their oaths, and we the people in jeopardy of losing our property and liberty to tyrants. The formal notifications of crime directs the participating court to honor their oaths and protect the victims from the following rules. One, notice of default. Failing to file the affidavit of default, providing adherence to due process, constitutes fraud. Trustee substitution, federal offense. Assuming fiduciary authority without filing a federal form 56 within the federal district constitutes fraud. Notice of sale, federal offense. Acting on a claim without filing a federal form 4490 within the federal district court constitutes fraud, and that's the proof of claim. Title transfer, federal offense. Transferring title without due process constitutes fraud. Any court that provides a summary judgment enters into a conspiracy under the color of law and escalates the crime to RICO. Eviction, federal offense. Any court granting an eviction being fully informed of the conspiracy to defraud enters into the conspiracy. Dispossession is a federal offense. Any sheriff executing a court order to evict after being fully informed of the conspiracy enters into the conspiracy. Doesn't matter whether they understand it. Doesn't matter whether they agree or not. They're guilty of these crimes. Statutory crimes violated by the aforesaid rules under the laws are RICO, usury, fraud, conspiracy, forgery, robo-signing, antitrust laws violations. Therefore, on behalf of the petitioner, you see, we're going to take people who are petitioning us to help them because they're being violated. And we, the grand jury, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, being the sureties of the peace, have a duty to help these people. Therefore, on behalf of the petitioner, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury demands that the court of the nonjudicial foreclosure filing in good faith do your duty and protect the victims of these crimes by removing all said filings immediately, cease from all nonjudicial foreclosure practices, and notify this court of the same. We further demand that the said bureaucrat defendants withdraw said filings from the court of filing, cease all nonjudicial foreclosures filing, and notify this court immediately. Wherefore, the most important paragraph of the entire paper is always in the wherefore clause. That's not necessarily true because you have to prove your case and everything else, but you have to tell the court what you're expecting to be done, and that's the wherefore clause. If the defendants default, this court will be moved for an order to cease and desist their subversive activities, restore the petitioner to their original state before the misuse of justice under the color of law, and be brought before the full grand jury for consideration of indictment for conspiracy, subversion, RICO, war against the Constitution, and other charges. And that brings us to the end of the paper. And we do intend on indicting in these cases. And we're working, before we actually do the indictments, We are working to try to tie a relationship with the United States Attorney General up there in Washington, for us down there in Washington. And we're expecting him to do his due diligence in law, following the law. We're expecting him to work with us, and we're going to notify the president of every communications we have with this individual. We're going to ask for prosecutors to come in and prosecute these cases. We're going to bring these indictments right inside our court case, because they won't take our indictments outside. You know, we can file an indictment and they just brush it off. They don't care. We're going to file it inside this case. Because extraordinary circumstances require and calls for extraordinary responses and activities, and that's what we're going to do. These are extraordinary times, and we have to do extraordinary things. So these cases here, anybody who is in a situation where they have already lost their home, or they're in the process of losing their home, whether it be for a tax foreclosure, or for a, a mortgage foreclosure. You know, we will be, next week we'll announce the information on where you can go and fill out the forms to petition us, and then we will follow through with this process. Now, we're doing this for a number of reasons. First of all, it's our duty to do it. We've come to understand how we can do this, and we also realize, people are being injured. We have to pick our battles, and we have to pick them very carefully. And so we have to decide what we're going to do and what we're not going to do. But everything we're doing at this point has to focus in on winning in the court, getting ourselves into the court, getting some wins and getting some prosecuting going, getting some indictments and getting some people prosecuted, because that's what's going to empower us to move further in and deeper into the courts and get the authority and the recognition that we the people deserve as the consenters of government through the grand jury, which arises out of the people, not from the courts. It arises out of the people. It's separate from the courts. United States versus Williams. Everyone should have read that by now. If they haven't, they should. It's up on our website. One of the most important papers for us to read and understand the power and the authority of we the people to consent to government through the courts and taking justice back into our courts. So we need to understand those papers. But again, it all starts with a framework. You know, you have to have a framework, and that's why we put together those two courses. But you see, building these cases is building a conspiracy. We're going to show this is not just something here in New York, in this little location, in this court or two. No, this is something in every court here in the United States is doing the same thing. That's a conspiracy. And when you can show this, you're doing the same ruse and using the same processes and doing the same process of fraud upon the people. When you can show that, you've proven it's a conspiracy. You only need to show that between two or three people. We can show that between thousands of people, depending on how many people, you know, are become aware of what we're doing and work, come to us to work with us to help them, and they help us. Together, we work together to help ourselves to save this nation. Because this is what's going to get us in and springboard us and go after these people for conspiracy. And once we start putting these judges in jail, once we start putting these even bad prosecutors in jail, if necessary, we'll go after them too. And once we start putting these mortgage companies, bankers in jail, that's when we're going to get our nation back. And we bring the king of the court back in. Now, I do want to say one other thing here before I move on to our next part of the program here. And that is, anybody who asks for our help, we will freely give, but we also require that you freely give back. We will ask for a donation because, you know, we have to pay for paper and we have to pay for the cost of course, toner and stuff and certifying, serving the papers and so on. And there are some people who can't afford to pay anything. So we have to pay for that, too. So we will be asking for a nominal fee. No, I want to call a donation. Erase that word. I never said that, fee. We're not asking anyone for anything. And that's not coming to the grand jury. That's a donation to National Liberty Alliance. And National Liberty Alliance is donating everything necessary for the grand jury to operate, because the grand jury is just we the people and have no money to operate and depends upon funding from somewhere. And since the government won't give the funding to the common law grand jury, the National Liberty Alliance is giving that funding to the Common Law Grand Jury. So National Liberty Alliance is sponsoring that program and that process. And National Liberty Alliance needs to be supported in order to fund and deal with that, to fund that program, that process. And this isn't the only thing we're doing. We have the gun papers that we just filed against the governor here in New York and also the legislators of both houses. That took time and money to put together. We had to serve all those papers. We had to print them out, put them in envelopes, and get them out. We have about 30 habeas corpuses that we've already filed, and we got to continue to go through that process and get all those into the court also. And we're going to continue to take, we're working to take new habeas corpuses. If you've lost your children, if you have friends or family in jail, or if you're in the threat of going to jail, we'll be taking habeas corpuses also. I don't know whether we'll be ready to take habeas corpuses in a week. Next Monday, I know I will be able to announce, I'm sure I'll be able to announce, that we will be taking petitions for these foreclosure problems. And we'll give you the location on the website where we'll set up, where you can go and fill out the petition form, and we'll start that process immediately. I'm hoping to be able to announce the habeas corpus process starting to also, but I don't know whether we can do that by next week. We're still working with a team of people, training them in the process of the paperwork. And if that's ready next week, then we'll start doing that too next week at the same time. So we have a lot of these cases going in, and we're doing this again in order to break into the courts and be able to take back control of the courts. We have to have some wins. And we do expect that the United States, Attorney General works with us. Now, of course, there's a U.S. attorney here who's a prosecutor who I don't know who, there's a new appointing coming up, so I don't know if the president has appointed anyone yet. But that person will be contacted also, as well as the Attorney General, making him or her aware of the fact that they're going to be the prosecutor in this case. And if they don't perform, we're going to ask the president why they're not performing to obey the law. We can't pick and choose what law we're going to obey. The law is the law. Either we have law and we obey the law, or we don't obey the law and we're lawless, and that's it, one or the other. You know, don't pick and choose. Don't tell me we got to obey this law, but that's okay, you don't have to obey that law. We got to hold their feet to the fire. And it gets back to ignorance again. I speak to myself first, you know, if the people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen. If your people think that they're going to get their nation back, their countries back, each state is a country, we the people, every country, all the countries together, United States is a nation. If you think you're going to get your countries back or your nation back without having knowledge, forget about it. It's not going to happen. If you think one or two or three or five or ten people are going to do it, forget about it. It's not going to happen. If you think you can do it and then let someone else worry about it and go back to ignorance, go back to sleep again, forget about it. It's not going to happen. It's not for free. Liberty is not free. You have to work for it. And you have to keep it. You have to save it. You have to fight for it. You have to die for it. So, you know, we need everybody. And we have a meetings every Monday right before this meeting, which is a board meeting, and we pull all of the leadership, the national leadership together. We're organizing the nation and re-energizing our leadership all the way down into the county level. And we have a structure. I forget where that page is. We laid it up. I know we put a page up there with a structure. There's so much going on sometimes I forget where everything's at. I forget exactly where it's at. But we laid up the structure up there. We'll talk a little more about structure that's coming in the coming weeks. Next week, I'm not sure what we'll be looking at, but we will hopefully be able to launch this program. And either that weekend or the weekend after, maybe we'll be launching the habeas corpus program. And we're going to go full bore. We feel very confident. They can't defend themselves. If the judge tries to throw just one out, we will give him a writ of error. We will remove him from the bench, and we will make him a defendant, co-conspirator, to the whole process. Let's see what they do with that. They, by throwing one case out, can't close the whole case. And that was one of the reasons why we decided to go with so many cases on one case number. And they're very diversified. We're going in, we're even going in for the assassination of Lavoy Finnegan in this case. We're going after those people. We want to know the FBI agent. We're going after the sheriff out there. If he's listening, we're coming. We're coming out after him. He is the most responsible individual for the whole thing out there with Lavoy Finnegan. He should have done his job, stood up and kicked the feds out. And he could have done it. They've already done it out west out there in a lot of those states. They've kicked the feds out. And that's what he should have done. But he had no backbone. He wasn't the sheriff. He was a puppet. And so he's guilty of murder. And we want the people who pulled those triggers, they're guilty of murder. We want that FBI agent in charge out there. He's guilty of murder. The governor is conspiracy in this murder. We can show that too. The state police is guilty of conspiracy of murder. The White House, we can show connections directly and orders directly to the White House. The people in there are guilty of murder. Some of those people may be too big to go out after yet, but one day in time, you know, it'll happen. It's up to the people. So anyway, that's pretty much where we're at with that. Let's move on to something, and we'll be opening up Q&A in a little while. But Jan, do we have any announcements, or do we have any questions that were nailed in?
No, we don't have any real Q questions. The only announcement is that from now on, this is the room that we will be using for all of our conference calls. So make sure next week you come back to this room and don't go back to the old one. It's now defunct. We won't be using that anymore.
Yeah, they changed the platform, and it just doesn't work for us. So this is freeconferencing.com, where the other one was Free Conference Call HD. Was that what it was called? Yeah, Free Conference Call HD, I think it was, yeah. Owned by the same company, but they changed the other one so drastically, it's just a horror story. Okay, let's see. So there's no announcements, no questions. Let's see. We need leaders. We need leaders. We need leaders. Everybody should be a leader. If they got time to be a leader, let's be a leader. Everyone should be giving us an hour a week minimum. You know, get in touch with Jan. Go to the directory. You'll find Jan's phone number up there or email. Get in touch with Jan and find out what you can do to save your nation. Okay? What was it Kennedy said? Ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country. He really should have said nation. Ask not what your nation can do for you, but what you can do for your nation. You know, we've all been tainted by the lie. You know, we talk about democracy. We're not a democracy. You know, what is it? Benjamin Franklin, I think it was the one that said democracy is two wolves and a lamb deciding on what's for dinner. And a republic, I think he said, was a well-armed lamb. What was it?
Two wolves and a well-armed lamb.
Yeah, well, a well-armed lamb contesting the vote. That's what it is, a well-armed lamb contesting the vote. So I don't know. Some people say that Benjamin Franklin didn't say it, but who cares? It's true. That's the picture. If there's one person who wants their unalienable right and steps up and says, I got a right for this, it's an unalienable right. Just one person and the whole nation. You could have everyone else in the nation vote and go against that person. That one person stepping up for their unalienable right is the one that where it stands in a republic. It's called the law. Okay, the law of the land. Gerard, you here? Did Mr. G come in tonight? I don't hear him, so I guess he's not here. Okay, we're going to move over to Brent Winters. Brent Winters is the author of The Excellence in the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. com. Brent, are you here? Star 6 to unmute. And
yeah, I just unmuted him.
Okay. Yeah, but one of the things we're going to have to complain about that is people can't unmute themselves, you know, we've got to figure that problem out. But Brent, you got the
mic
for a while.
And it,
go right
I
ahead.
Think it's
and
finally,
we'll take questions after Brent is done. But go ahead, Brent.
Okay. My unmuting did finally work, so we're in good shape.
Great.
Well, you can hear me. Let's see how we can get going here. We're talking about the declaration of, I like to call it the declaration of dependence. The words declaration of independence don't appear anywhere in the document as such, and that those were added later. But it's the unanimous declaration of the 13 states, and there is no independence declared in it. There is a shifting dependence declared, and it's declared in unambiguous and clear words, and the dependence is shifted from the Crown of England to the Supreme Judge of all the world. That's the foundation of it. It is a, it's a complaint, as it were, common law complaint. But before, we went through the outline of it last time, and some of you probably weren't here, I want to begin by saying, don't want to forget to say this, the only remedy to lawlessness is law, true law. And we see lawlessness all about us. It is the nature of man to become increasingly lawless unless there's some restraining, some objective restraining force. And the supreme judge of all the world, who is the creator of all things, who is the only true lawgiver, is the only possibility to provide that restraining force. And when you see people around you with their bodies completely covered with tattoos and bones in their noses, that's just one example, that's not the problem. The problem is what causes that. That's the problem. What causes the and that's just an example. Again, there are many things. Unlimited behavior without limit. That's what we're seeing, and it's coming out more pronouncedly to be something that's in government, and it's nothing more than men and women acting as though they're animals without responsibility and abusing each other and abusing little children. And the pedophile arrests have reached up above the thousands now, and of course they're not mentioned in the media. But they're being rounded up, and I'm glad they are. And it's just folks want to gain power so they can fill their lusts. Declaration 76, laws of nature's God. That's the way it begins. And it's very, very organized to the IT. We have five self-evident truths in verse 2. Just quickly, I'll go over what I'd said last time, not in the detail I did. Two duties, patience and action. And then there's a four-part test in paragraph 2, a four-part test that tells us what they believed at that time, tells us when we are to act in resistance against tyranny. This is our fundamental law as Americans. And then the facts proving tyranny are listed, the facts. And then notice is given a succession, separation from the British Empire, and the reasons why, and then the trust and loyalty is declared in paragraph 32. Well, let's begin. Why did the United States become its own country? I don't know about you, folk, each one of you, I don't know who I'm talking to. I keep telling myself. And I think it's a good policy to keep in mind that when I talk, I'm speaking to the cubic foot of air in front of my face. And if it goes any further than that, well, that's good. But if it doesn't, I still have a responsibility and a duty to talk and to say the right things as much as I can possibly do it as God gives me the light. Why did the United States become its own country? We're getting to the bottom here. Let's think about ultimate things maybe you've tried a lot of other things that didn't work. I know I have. I've even tried politics. I ran for Congress. Learned a lot. Thought I'd gotten to the bottom of things. I got pretty close. But I since that time got to the bottom of things because after I got into politics, touching politics is like getting just a little bit involved with organized crime. It's not like getting involved. It is getting involved with organized crime. And if you get involved with organized crime, just a little bit, they think they own you. And they're going to make you pay if you don't toe the line. And then you find out what organized crime is really all about when they try to make you pay. Well, the guy I tried to get to the bottom of it, I discovered this a number of years ago, an interview. I use it often when I was in politics, and I thought it made a couple of good points. So I'm going to use it here to begin our discussion of the Declaration of 76. A true story, as far as I could trace it out, of a young lawyer. This young lawyer was about, say young, he was just over 40 years old. I think he was 42 or 43, and this occurred in the year 1842, but he set about to find the power that stirred the underfed and ill-fitted American militiamen to dare the odds with their lives against the world's best fed, best equipped, best trained military forces, namely British regulars and German Hessians. The British regulars were known for their utter might, and the German Hessians were known for their precision in military drill. They were truly, as the American Continental soldier called them, myrmidons. They were machine-like, and they killed on command and died on command. Well, this young lawyer sought out and questioned 91-year-old Captain Levi Preston, veteran of the historic Battle of Concord. And he began his questioning. He wanted to know what motivated him to do these things. He said, "Did you take up arms against intolerable oppressions?" And the old militiaman said, "Oppressions?" He said, "I didn't feel any." And he said, "What?" He said, "Were you not oppressed by the Stamp Act?" He said, I never saw one of those stamps, and I'm certain I never paid a penny for one." He said, "Well, what about the tea tax?" He said, "Tea tax? I never drank a drop of the stuff. The boys threw it all overboard." They thought, "Well, maybe the man is an intellectual." He said, "Well, I suppose you had been reading Harrington or Sidney and Locke about the eternal principles of liberty." He said, "I never heard of them. We read only the Bible, the Catechism, Watts, Psalms and Hymns, and the Almanac." So this young lawyer said, "Well, what was the matter, and what did you mean, going to the fight?" And this old 91-year-old man said, "Young man, what we meant in going for those redcoats was this." Now listen to what he says. "We'd always governed ourselves, and we always meant to. They didn't mean that we should." And I dare say that the folk that really made it happen, I'm not talking about the people we call the founding fathers. Those fellows were politicians. They were, when they spoke and wrote, they echoed what they knew people wanted to hear. Now they may have believed it. Don't misunderstand me. But they weren't the ones that made it happen. They were the ones that, like Winston Churchill, they had the words that inspired people and carried the day, but they were not the ones that made it happen. People like Captain Preston made it happen. I dare say he didn't understand a whole lot of what Jefferson and Madison and all those fellows were talking about, Adams. He did understand that he had always governed himself. He and his family and his neighbors had always meant to, as he said, but they did not mean that we should. Well, for Captain Preston and his fellow British Americans, self-government meant that each person governed his own thoughts and his own words and his own actions. And as the old captain then revealed, such love for self-government grew from an education in freemanship. Now, he reveals this in this little interview. I'll show you what I think he's saying here. An education for freemanship, that's what motivated him. And the ancient Romans called such an education liberal. Today, we just call it a liberal education. What is a liberal education? Well, that's a fancy Latin word. It means an education for freedom. That's what it means. An education, to be more precise, for freemanship. And in many places in the Roman and the Greek world, one half of the population owned the other half in slavery. That's not an exaggeration. I read a record of a census of the Isle of Crete. Ancient census has been preserved, and one half of the population owned the other half. So they had two kinds of education. They had an education for freemanship. That's for the one half that were free. And then, if you weren't free, you were educated servile. That was called not a liberal education, but a servile education. You were educated to be a servile person, to be a slave. What does a slave do? Well, a slave is a man who substitutes the will and discretion of his own will and discretion. He substitutes the will of his master and the discretion of his master for his own. It is discretion that marks the free man, discretion. That means that you have responsibility before your creator to apply the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God in specific instances. In instances that are new to you, you must exercise discretion. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not steal. We say, well, that's easy. Well, sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. I was reading today. It says that the son, handsome son of a gun he was, the son of David, king of Israel, had a boy by the name of Absalom. Drop dead gorgeous fellow. But his heart was black. And it said that he stole the heart desires of the people. The people, that means the militia. The men, he stole them. Stole them from what? They stole them from God. That's stealing. Is there any way to punish a man that does something like that? No, not unless he acts on it. But it's stealing nonetheless. Thou shalt not steal amounts to a lot of different things. I heard a story about a fellow one time. He was a butcher. He had a meat shop. And he told another man, he confided in him, after he had seen the light and quit doing it, he said, I had a way of weighing down the scale with my thumb. For every piece of meat I would throw on the scale, I could weigh it down 2 ounces just because I knew my scale so well and I could lay my thumb on it a certain way and nobody had noticed. Two ounces for every pound, he said. That's what it was. 2 ounces per pound. Well, that's stealing. He wasn't applying the law of God. He wasn't applying the law, because that's the only law there is. But a person has to be alert and willing to exercise discretion. An education in freemanship is what makes men free. And Captain Preston here reveals what that education is. The laws of God only come in two volumes, the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. The Declaration of 76 says that, and that's a true observation. The laws of nature are unwritten in the creation of things, in the nature of things, and the laws of nature of God written and expressed in particular in the Bible. William Blackstone says that in the first volume of his commentaries on the laws of England. He expounds that set of phrases, the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. Those commentaries were written a full 10 years before the Declaration of 76. And our Declaration of 76 says the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. It's talking about our common law and the Bible. The common law is the nexus. It is the conduit that puts legs on the first principles that are expressed and written in the Bible. It's up to us to exercise discretion to see how those apply and to apply them. And since we've been having these presentations, and since I've been listening to these presentations, and since I've been listening to NLA talk about habeas corpus, it's come clear to me, a lot clearer to me, that habeas corpus is an exercise of common law discretion. It's not in the Bible, but the principles in the Bible, false imprisonment's against the covenants of God to scatter across the face of the land. That's why false imprisonment false imprisonment has always been against the law, common law, because it's a principle in the Bible, but we have had to be creative, exercise discernment. How can we make this thing real? We have in our Constitution a right to a speedy trial, a right to a speedy and public trial. The right to a speedy trial in our federal courts, I know for sure, in the state courts, struggle also, but in our federal courts, the right to a speedy trial has never, since the history of our nation, never been realized in America. Is it a principle of God? Yes. Is it a principle of our common law? Yes. We recognize the problem. We see it. Congress passed the Speedy Trial Act, and they said when they passed it back in the 80s, this is, I'm paraphrasing, I don't remember the exact words, but the reason they did it was because they realized, even though it was a principle that needed to be enforced, we've not found a way, we've not found the mechanism, such as we did for a while with habeas corpus on false imprisonment. And by the way, speedy trial is about, among other things, it's about false imprisonment. You don't have to hold a man in jail for 30 years before you try him. That's what was going on in England, and it's happened in other places. Now, we're working on it here. I realize we are. And in some cases, even in the federal courts, they're doing something about it, but they're not following the Speedy Trial Act of Congress, worth a hoot. I know that. I've watched that. Coming back to the point, it is the discretion of a free man. It is the ability. It's not something you just do and it works. No, it doesn't work that way. Hebrews chapter 5 says that we must exercise our discretion to sharpen it. You have to exercise muscles to make them strong, to make them have the power to endure. And you must, according to Hebrews chapter 5, exercise discretion in order to understand how it works and make it work. Discretion is the mark of a free man. But this man had an education in freemanship, and that means an education moving him toward that characteristic of a free man, the exercise of individual discretion. And discretion is individual, you see. It's not the discretion of another man. It's your discretion. When you're on the jury, it's you. No, it's not you and 12 other people. No, it's you. And if jurors don't understand that it is them, they must make their decision individually without anybody else forcing them. And if the jury's hung, the jury's hung. That's the end of it. You don't have to go along with anybody else. In fact, you shouldn't. And that's true in all of life. And if there's any strength in our country, it's because we, and as Americans, have said more than any people that's ever come together on the face of our planet to form a nation, a country, we have said that every man must decide for himself. Every man must decide for himself what the Bible means by what it says. Every man must decide for himself what is constitutional and what is not. That's the strength of America. It comes in two forms, the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. There were two books that came into America as men beat a path across a wilderness. They couldn't carry a lot of books. They didn't have internet. But there were two books. One was a set of books and another was just a book that they took, and it spelled our character as a nation. It came to spell the character because of what that did to us, just having those volumes, those two volumes, the laws of nature, unwritten in the nature of things. Men had to live by it. Ben Franklin made this point to the English when he went over there. He said, "You failed to understand who we are. We're people that we're trying to cut out our lives out of the wilderness. You don't understand that. And when you do that, you pay attention to the laws of nature, or you die." And that's been our strength in the past. And then the other book we had, of course, had the Bible. Had the Bible. And the high church, the educated church, would not come into the mountains and then cross over to the other side, by and large. And men had to form their own leadership without formal education. All they had was a book. And all they knew was English. They had an English Bible. They used it. And they used it with great force, great force. And they took it, and they believed it, amazingly. And then they decided for themselves what it meant, individually. And one group over here says, "We think it means this," and another group over here says, "We think it means this." And Paul the Apostle said in the book, "There must be divisions among you." There must be. There has to be. And if there isn't, You're not going to hash out the truth. All these things are the beauty of men standing on their own, doing their own thing, freedom of association to join with those who see it the way you see it. That's called freedom of association. And freedom to disassociate. Well, let's get to Captain Preston. I want to just make a mention about discretion. He had two volumes, and he reveals that in this interview. The unwritten volume, called The Laws of Nature, Blackstone calls General Revelation, by the way, in that first volume of his commentaries. He calls that General Revelation because it shows us the Creator's ordering of power in nature. The signs and the seasons, the laws of nature needful living this life on earth that we must pay attention to. The state legislature does not say we want to make sure that in this state, the state of Iowa, for example, in this state, we're passing a law that we're tired of people all planting their crops in the spring. We're going to make a law that says every other year we're going to draw a lottery, and every other year every farmer has to, on every piece of land, has to be planted in alternate years. One plants in the fall, another plants in the spring. The roads are crowded with farm equipment. It's causing problems. That's crazy. But that's what legislatures do sometimes. They fight God. They fight the laws of nature. It's our common law tradition that people that sit in legislative bodies are to observe, make observation of what the laws of nature are, those things that will not change, and legislate to enforce and encourage people in that. Our legislatures are to follow common law courses of conduct. And that's what the common law is, a course of conduct, a course of doing things, a process, due process. Well, Blackstone calls this general revelation. Why? Because it's general and open to all. The laws of nature are to everybody. The Bible even says that. Psalms chapter 19, that's what it's all about. The heavens, it says, the skies, the Hashemim in the Hebrew, heaven, skies, that stuff up there. Stars, the moon, the sun, it says, the heavens declare the glory of God. And the firmament speaks, we're talking words here, speaks for his finger work, his handiwork. That's general and open to all. Everybody can see it. Everybody can notice the laws of nature, even here on land as they come to earth. We live by the times and the seasons. The times and the seasons are told by the preciseness of the heavens. The calendar is precise. Now, we haven't got a calendar that's perfect yet. We're still off by a few seconds every year, by the way, or maybe a half a second. I've got it written in one of my books. I looked it up once. But my point is the heavenly bodies are perfect in their movements, and we live by them. And if we don't live by them, we die. The written volume, Blackstone says, the Bible is special revelation. It's not general and open to all. It's special. William Blackstone, and I agree with him. I accord, as we say. And he says it's special because it's more personal. It reveals nature's God, the God that created nature, but it adds his stirring words of life. Let him that has ears that hear Jesus Christ, it is recorded, he says over and over and over again. That's special revelation. That's only to certain people, those that accept, that are willing to accept the conclusions that it draws, and that you must draw from that revelation. Well, that's the written, unwritten volume, unwritten in the nature of things, written in the Bible. And then Captain Preston, he references both of those. Then he references the almanac. He says, we read only the Bible, the catechism, Watts, Psalms, and Hymns, and the almanac. We did not read John Locke, Harrington, Algernon Sidney, those are good books, by the way, those fellows wrote, Algernon Sidney, John Locke, the second treatise of government, Algernon Sidney, discourses on government. But let's face it, most folks did not read such books. Pardon me, something came on here. Shut it off. They didn't read those books, but they were motivated because they were free men. The laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. Captain Preston trusted these standards, and it stirred him. to defend to the end his God-given duties. Duties to self-governance, and he made mention of that. The almanac, by the way, that he mentions is an observation of men about the laws of nature, you see. Watts' Psalms and Hymns, a very popular hymn book in those days. You can still buy it, it's just not as popular as it once was, but it was so popular then, it was the only hymn book in any church, regardless of the denomination. Of course, there weren't that many denominations by comparison, but they all sang the same hymns. The Congregationalists, the Puritans, the Presbyterians, and the German and Dutch Reformed groups, most of those in Pennsylvania, although not all of them. Some of them were down in the Carolinas, too, in Georgia. But our country never arose from any whole new idea for law and government, and as did the framers of our Constitution of the United States, and the framers of Magna Carta. Those folks like Captain Preston sought to return to the ancient common law principles and did. The ancient common law principles. Listen to Supreme Court Justice James Wilson. James Wilson, by the way, an immigrant, well, a lot of people were immigrants in those days. Not everybody. Some were born here. A lot were born here. But James Wilson was an immigrant from Scotland. He was on the first bench of the Supreme Court of the United States. He said this, "American common law is closer to the common law of the ancient Anglo-Saxons than it is to that of the Normans. The Anglo-Saxons, like the Americans, had a more expansive notion of individual liberty." And then he ended and he said this, "Common law is of origin divine." Origin divine, he says. Well, I agree, it's the laws of nature. It's a significant slice of that. And the colonists in America were determined to keep and enjoy the freedoms and benefits of their common law government in the New World. Matter of fact, they called it their constitution. If you don't know what constitution means to them, then it doesn't make sense that they, in 1774, demanded in writing, the first meeting of our Congress, October 14, 1774, they sent a letter to Parliament and they demanded the freedoms of their constitution. That's exactly what it says. You have to ask yourself, of what did they speak? Well, they were speaking of their common law, and especially, they said, the right to trial by jury, which is only available in common law countries. In fact, says Winston Churchill, the American colony's 18th century war with Britain was the Puritan 17th century war with the Royalists, continued into the New World, where children of Puritans and Royalists joined to resist the king and his cronies' attempts to replace common law freedoms with a far-off imperial will. We were part of the empire. King George and Parliament and all those people in England, they knew that King George wasn't king. King George knew that he wasn't king in his empire. He wasn't king in America. And you see it on all the documents. No, he was king in England. Well, what was he in America? He was emperor. Emperor. What does that mean? That means he was imperial. That means his will governed, not law. If you can't grasp that simple fact, then a fellow doesn't have a clue why we went to war with those folks. Now, when they told the people in India and Pakistan that he was their emperor, they didn't bat an eye. Why? Well, they didn't know any different. And they never did. They never had known any different. For generations, for thousands of years, they never knew any different. But when they told people in America that, that didn't sit well because they said, now, wait a minute. We're cousins. We came here under charters. We have even in writing guarantees that we can enjoy our common law freedoms here. You can do that to the people on the other side of the world that don't know any different, but we know the difference, and we demand it, and you're not going to do that to us. And that's why we went to war. We went to war because we wanted our common law. That's why we went to war. No, we did not go to war primarily over a tea tax. Well, it's true that the whole key thing that was about the monopoly of the British East India Company, they said, you have to buy our tea. You can't buy tea from anybody else. That was the Bank of London. The trading arm of the Bank of London was the British East India Company. The Bank of London had the same power over England that it had has the Federal Reserve Bank has over America, a monopoly. Well, Lord Coke, Justice Coke, Edward Coke said, a monopoly is against the common law because it's against the freedom of the individual to do what he believes is best, to make his discernment about who he wants to associate with in a contract to buy tea. Freedom of contracts, freedom of association. You see, it's another, so it's a matter of discernment. To whom do I want to contract to buy my tea? Do I want to buy my tea at Aldi's, or do I want to buy my tea at Walmart? Well, we say in America we have the right to choose who to associate ourselves with in an association agreement of contract. Well, they were telling the colonists they couldn't do that. What was the problem? The tea? No. The problem was they weren't allowing us our common law freedoms because monopolies are against the common law. Because they're against the freedom of the individual to exercise discernment and freedom of association. See, it all comes back to they were denying the freedoms of the common law that the common law demanded. There's nothing magic about the words common law. It's been called many things through the centuries, but that's just the thing we call it now. We also call it, our Constitution calls it, the law of the land, which means due process. That's what our common law is mostly. It's how we do things. But our forebears settled the question about the common law, the law of the land versus the law of the city. They settled that question by battle in favor of the common law. They took it to the mat. And we're the only country in the world, the only common law country that's ever been in the world, that became a country because we went to war over the question. Now, there are a few common law countries, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, pretty much the English-speaking world. But Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and Tasmania, and the Cook Islands, none of them gained their freedom fighting for their common law. We did. And it gave a whole different tenor to our character. We look at things differently because of that experience. Don't think it doesn't hang on to us. It does. The way a place starts and its beginnings define its character, and that definition will never go away. Did you ever wonder why things are so loosey-goosey and crazy in California? I can talk about it. I've lived there for 10, 15, I don't know, all over the years, a lot of years I was out there. A lot of years. And I know California. It's loosey-goosey. They used to have a sign up on Interstate 5 going north into Oregon. This is before the Californians, the crazy people, all went up to Oregon to make a fortune raising pot back in the 70s and 80s. But they had a sign that said, now leaving California, please resume normal behavior. Well, the way California started was lawlessly because there was no law. Amazing stories. They put it together finally. But all the things that came here, people from all over the world came to California. It was settled by people from everywhere, desirables and undesirables. And that character has hung on to that place, no question. And our character has hung on to us as Americans. We still, it's not genetic, but it's generational. It's just who we are, and we can't shake it. Thank God, I hope we don't shake it. It puts conviction in you when the force of government is laid as a hammer against people's heads. And it comes to violence. It changes them forever. It changes the individual forever. How do I know? Well, I've had that happen. Maybe you have too. It'll change your point of view. You won't see it the same. And everything that's good becomes more precious, namely liberty, freedom to go where you want to go, bodily movement, to make it down to the brass tacks, as we used to say. Our Declaration of 76 lists the train of overt acts, abuses, and usurpations, proving that King George's conspiracy with England's central bank money cartel and offshoot trading monopolies to replace common law courts and government with civil law, the law of the city's international admiralty and martial law courts. And they're not courts at all. They're nothing but tribunals and inquisitions. There are no courts in the rest of the world. Rule by distant decree, searches without warrant, tribunals without due process, criminal convictions without the jury. That's what they were facing in the American colonies, the 13 colonies. Sounds like the same abuses and usurpations now afoot in the United States. Things people complain about. Rule by distant decree from Washington, D.C., searches without a warrant and arrests and seizures, tribunals without due process, and criminal convictions without the jury. There it is. Things don't change. That's what the Declaration of 76 complains about at the bottom, and that's what folks are complaining about today, and rightly complaining about. Today, much of the independence of the powers that be displace our common law government with civil law under its many labels. And there are many. Best known, of course, is admiralty law, martial law, it's martial at bottom, administrative law, bureaucratic law, all sorts of names that are given to it to try to fool us. They're running out of names. Or this whole flap of Donald Trump talking about the FISA courts. The FISA courts. There's another one. A neutral and independent magistrate, as our Constitution requires, they were going to give us new courts. Why do we need new courts? Why do we need special courts that only handle requests for wiretapping? Why do we need that? Why can't they just take it into a federal court or state court? Whenever the powers that be say, we're going to establish a new court, I don't care what it is, you ought to stand up and say no. It's no! Every time that happens, and this is an ancient ruse of the evil empire, once the evil empire has independent courts and they use labels that make you think they're okay, then they have absolute power in those courts. That's the way Rome attempted, didn't get the job done, but it was a fight and a lot of people died, and that's what brought the English Civil War. Because the church courts, when the Normans came to England, they, for a while, the priest set as, the Roman priest set as judges. And then as time went on, the common law court said, well, the priests still have to be tried in our courts for murder if they're accused of murder. And there was a battle going on. And finally, the Pope of Rome said, no, the courts in England have to be separate from the courts, from the common law courts, because he could see it was going to be a battle. He wanted the courts, because once you've got the courts, you've got everything. If whoever makes the final decision in individual instances of disagreement governs, period. That's why the jury is so important, you see. And FISA courts, they've got the absolute control, and believe me, they're doing things in secret nobody knows about. Well, they really need secrecy. If it really is that necessary, the regular common law courts, the federal courts, the state courts of general jurisdiction, the states, they have the power to seal documents if they have to. They should do it very rarely, but if it's necessary, it can be done. That's the argument they have for FISA courts. Well, I've talked long enough. I wanted to get to the first paragraph. We're almost there, but I've not been in a hurry in these presentations. And Lord willing, I come on next time. We'll get to the first paragraph and get past the introduction. The Declaration of Dependence, the Declaration of 76. That's all I have, John. Thanks for the
okay. opportunity. Thank you, Brent. Appreciate. All right. If anybody has any questions for Brent or myself or anyone else, star six to get into the queue. We've got Q&A already started. We do have one person in the queue at the moment. So star six for anybody who's got a question or a comment. First caller is Curtis from Virginia. How you doing, Curtis? Let me find the button here. Get my cursor over to it. Go ahead, Curtis. Go ahead.
Yeah. You hear me now?
We can hear you.
I feel like I'm on Verizon, but I was wondering.
We can hear you now.
Can you hear me now?
We can hear you now.
Okay. Good deal. I was wanting to know if I read your letter that you sent Trump sometime here back. And I was wanting to know if you had considered maybe we could press him to put you on a committee to actually involve with the government to set up training committees to educate people about the grand juries, because you mentioned something
about
it in the letter.
Well, that's a good idea, but let's take it a different way. We don't want to be in a situation where we're connected to the government. We need to be separated from the government. Now, we can be an advisor to the government, and we have taken on that role. We've been faxing every government individual, anybody that's elected on the federal and state level, as far as Congress and of every state, and of course the U.S. Congress, every federal court judge, every state court judge, every sheriff, every governor has heard from We the People through the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. We've been sending them information for a year, preparing for this time period to enter into the courts, which we just entered into the courts at the beginning of this year. I think we actually filed in the courts at the very end of December, and we started serving in January, if I recall. I'm going through my all of records right now. Now, we are already advising the President of the United States through information as we speak. And we made a connection through, secondary means into the the President's camp before he became president. And he's been involved in what's going on out west. He was very interested in the people and their problems out there. He's made some visits out there. At least he's sent some of his people out of his camp out there. We also have been sending papers. They were delivered to him through those people out there before he became president, before we actually started sending papers directly to him. He asked for more paperwork. He was very interested in the paperwork that we had, so we have sent it directly to him prior to his election as president. When he became elected as president, he became president-elect and yet not yet serving as president. We started to send him papers, and when he became president, we then sent him papers and included him in this court case. He is a respondent. But we told him in his papers that because he was just newly elected, and that we don't know exactly how he's going to go, he didn't have to answer anything that we were talking. We were talking about sort of a redress of grievances almost, but he didn't have to answer any of the questions. In other words, he didn't have to respond to the paper. We didn't expect him to respond, but we did tell him is that we were going to watch his first 100 days. And then we might have some things that we might want him to respond to. So we've got more than just the letter. The letter was just kind of a beginning of things. And since then, we've sent him much paperwork. We've just we're preparing to send him our concerns and our papers that were filed here in New York against an action against the governor and also of New York here, Governor Cuomo, whatever, and also both, well, I was just making fun here. But anyway, also the both houses here, the Congress in New York concerning the Second Amendment. We're not going to pussyfoot around. We're not going to tiptoe around. We're not going up after the SAFE Act and all that stuff. But we're going up after our right to carry a weapon, period, without having to notify the government. We don't want them to know whether we have a weapon or not. It's none of their business. We can appreciate that in today's day and age, we have computers, so we can, they can, the people who sell us weapons, those that are in the market to do so, they can check to make sure certain individuals might not should have a weapon. And again, that's even a touchy thing. I mean, what people cannot have a weapon? If someone is violent and they're doing violent things, they belong locked away, in my opinion, and somehow maybe we can try to, fix them somehow. Right now we throw them into little jail cells, and that's not fixing the people. That's not trying to bring the people back to a proper state of mind and bringing them back into society. So something else needs to be done there. Obviously, people who murder people deserve the death penalty. The Bible says that, that if a man takes a life, by man shall his life be taken. And, of course, we've got to make sure that the person has committed, cold murder. There are certain situations where people might have killed somebody, but not necessarily intentionally, manslaughter and so on. I don't know that those people belong in jail. It wasn't particularly a violent act that they went forward and was determined to kill someone. So something else needs to be done there for restitution for the whatever it is. And again, I don't have those answers. I don't know. That's up to the jury to try to figure that out. We need to really study the principles in the Bible to see how we might go forward with that. But getting back to the question anyway, we are advising him, so to speak, by our papers. We copy him everything. He's asked for it, and we're giving it to him, and we're not going to stop until he tells us to stop. And if he tells us to stop, then maybe it's time to go after him too, because then we'll have some questions for him. Now, I've been paying very close attention to the president. I haven't heard what he has said today. I know that I haven't listened to the I usually listen to every White House briefing, and if there's a speech or something, I listen to what's going on. I haven't had that opportunity today, so I haven't caught up today. I've heard some things, and I got to go check to see if they're true. The bottom line is that we are advising him by filing papers. I think it would be inappropriate for him to come directly to us. After all, we are acting as a unified United States common law grand jury. If he were to make contact with National Liberty Alliance, that's a different story, maybe. And we want to stay independent from the government. We don't want to be connected. We do intend on going much further than where we're going here. We have a plan that takes us far, far further than just the judicial process. We're looking into the committee man process through the committees of safety to take back the political powers and authority. We're also looking into the education of our children. We want to get into all of our schools, make sure they have a proper education, make sure they have the necessary tools to learn about the Constitution, about civics, how government works. We also want to broaden our website in such a way as to be able to really put all the necessary information for every election that takes place across the entire nation at every level, all the way down to from the village all the way up into the White House here, into Washington, D.C., where we want to be able to educate people on what offices and show the structure of all these elected offices and who they appoint, what their jobs are and their authorities and what they should be doing. And in that process, anybody that runs for office, we want to be able to put up onto the website those people who get onto the ballots, maybe a 500-word essay from each one of those individuals, whereas people can come up and click in their election district, find out who's running for office within their election district, and be able to look at the people that are running and actually read, what they have to say about why they should be elected. So they're really, an educated process, not what they learn on TV, but what the people or on the radios, what people say or in the newspapers, but what people say, what they say. And we want to also train the committee men on how to look at people to be really bringing and walking their papers to get them onto the ballot as statesmen, okay? We also want to pursue the process of all this money flow out there in Washington, D.C. by all these special interest groups. That's called bribery. When you elect someone to go to Washington to do the business, the people's business, and he's supposed to be representing the people, and then he takes his vote and puts it towards, because he's been paid money by some special interest group, that's called bribery. And then he puts his vote. That person belongs in jail. And we want to do something about that too. But it all starts with education, and we got to get it back into the schools. We have to bring people back into a moral state of being. They've lost. America has lost its way. The people are as moral as their government is, and the government is as moral as the courts are, and its nation is as moral as ultimately us as a whole. The United States it does a lot of immoral things in the name of the people around the world, and they get away with it because we have immoral courts. But, the solution to all of these problems and the beginning of the solution is to first reinstate the king. Not that we have to do it. He's going to do it himself. But we become his instruments by doing what we're doing in order to bring the king back into the court. And when the king gets back into the court, now we have justice. And that king, of course, is the creator of the universe, the governor of the universe, and running under his principles, the laws of nature and of nature's God, those laws. that's what we've got to bring into the courts. When we do that and we the people operate under the principles and control the bringing together of the grand juries within every county and the trial juries within every county, bringing to them first and foremost the idea and the position and thinking of, you know, a sense of honor, justice, and mercy, and then it's up to the people to go in there and just figure things out. And people can figure, you know, you put 12 people in a room listening to the stories. It's just like any detective. You look for the inconsistencies. You look for where you catch them in the lies. They you know, contradict themselves, and they figure things out. And then they got to figure out how to fix the problem by not only figuring out what they're going to do with the person, but how are they going to do with the person to make them bring restitution to the individual that was injured, you see? So all of this works together. And we don't want to be connected directly to any kind, because then we could become taken over. Then we could be taken over very easily. We have to stay separate from all that. We, the people, have got to get to the point where we are totally, completely free and independent by taking control of our courts and our political process. You take control of those two things and then require them to obey the law and then bring our education back to the local. The people need to decide what their children need to learn. We need to make sure that they learn ethics must be a requirement, civics must be a requirement, and constitutional studies must be a requirement, and American, real American history, true American history, those must be requirements. With that, we can bring our nation back under God again. Not that
Amen.
We've ever necessarily totally been...
There. I know that what you mentioned about the special interest groups, to me, that's where... corporatism comes into play within the government, because we got government and corporatism, you know, pushing the socialistic federation that we've got. It's not really a republic. It's acting as a socialist or a democracy, as they call it. And I've had a few times I've heard the word that you never hear, republic, mentioned a few times here lately, and that was a shock. But I wanted to thank you and thank Brett Winters for his wonderful talks, because they're very enlightening. And I'm pretty much done with my question. Give somebody else a shout out.
Okay. Appreciate the call, Curtis. Thank you. Okay, let's take our next caller. Thank you. And by the way, when people come into this room, especially if you're coming in through the VoIP dialers, you know, which is through your browser, try to make sure you put a first name and a state. So put your first name, space, and a state so we know who you are. We don't need to know, you know, your last name or anything, but just your first name. Okay, and Jen, if you or someone can start putting names next to phone numbers that we don't have names, that'd be good. Let's take our next caller. It's a phone number 4663, ending in 4663.
Hi there. Yeah.
Hey,
hi.
How you doing? Who's this? First name and state.
Virginia. State of Virginia.
Okay. What's your first name, though?
You can call me Sue.
Okay, go right ahead.
I want to thank you for all your effort and energy, but I have a small comment to make, and if you let me make my comment, I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Do you know about the Bitcoin?
The who? Or the Bitcoins?
Yeah.
I've heard of them. I got a little bit of understanding, not much, but go right ahead.
Okay. The Bitcoin, in order to make a Bitcoin, they have to crack the code in order to have to make a Bitcoin, and they sell it, or everybody needs it, they buy it online and they exchange it. And my point of making that is that, what is note? Note is the same as Bitcoin, but they didn't tell us, nobody told us, that is that. The note is equal the money, because when you put your name and your signature and social security, all your information, you crack the code and you gave it to them. And they go and exchange it with something else and exchange it for something else. And they didn't disclose
so
it.
So what you're saying is that's already being corrupted, right?
Exactly. Because they never disclosed to us that this is the Bitcoin or this is the money, because the money is a note too, dollars. On top of it, it says it's note, and this is a note, and they they cracked the code and took it from us without disclosing it. And then they say that at the beginning of the note, before we sign it, they said the money that I received. What money I received? We never received any money. And then they put it that I give my property as a gift or something, as the property that I owe. If I owe it, why I have to give you something? If I don't owe it, why I have to give it to you? Do you understand what I mean? Is that
Look at you know, people are, everybody's trying to reinvent the wheel. Everyone is trying to figure a different way out. And do things, and Bitcoin was just another way to try to fix the money problem, and it's not going to work. Look at our founding fathers have already established something that works.
I don't want to promote the Bitcoin. My point was not
right.
to promote the Bitcoin. Right. My point was that somebody cracked some code, and when we give them a note, the same thing. That piece of paper is not a piece of paper when our information is there. It's the money, because they use
right.
it and sell it on their bond. That means it's there.
Right.
Has a value.
Look, at any time you have to record your information with people on something like that, I mean, money, particularly guns, you know, anything of that nature, you know, again, you're running into a problem here. Because then they have a list of people. The IRS likes that. And the IRS also likes, you know, the ATF. They like to know who's got the guns and all that other stuff. So, again, the solution is, why don't we all just obey the law of the land and make nothing else but gold and silver, you know, the tender of the land. That's it, period.
Yeah, that's the gold and silver is our signature, our social security, our name, our whatever information is on that piece of paper is our gold and silver. And they're using it without our knowledge. They distract us to get the information. And the reason it is important to know this information, because the first question judge asks you, did they give you money? And because we don't know the difference, we say yes.
Right.
Did you get it?
Right. Well,
yes.
We don't
understand what that judge means. No.
Well,
the answer
we
is
don't.
No.
We don't get into the Bitcoin, so we don't talk about bringing people doing those things.
Bitcoin was just an example to show that how they crack the code. And that note is the crack the code. We have to learn to crack that note in order the judge asks the question, did they give you money? What money? I don't understand what you're talking about. I don't get the answer. I don't understand the question, because if my signature create the money, my name, my address, my signature create the money, what are you talking about? I gave them money in exchange for that property.
Well, actually, you gave them debt in exchange for money, for that property, ultimately. Because even the Bitcoin, you have to exchange debt for Bitcoin, don't you? You have to give dollars in order to get Bitcoin. So right away, there's a flaw in the whole system. You know,
That is the bill of exchange. And if it is a bill of exchange, I give you something and you give it to me, why are you doing that to me? Why you distract me from the truth? And why you come and make all this question? Okay, I give you something. Did you give me any receipt? Where is your receipt? I want a receipt.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't have a receipt and you cannot give my note back, what are you talking about?
Well, you know, again, this gets back, this whole business gets back to the money changers, okay? Again, it's the same thing with the money changers. People took it to the money, to their gold and silver, to the place where the money changers, and then they gave it to them and they got little notes and, you know, they says, okay, we got your money here. And then people started to exchange the notes between themselves and didn't go back to get the gold or the silver to exchange, and they accepted the notes. And the next thing you know, they realized that how often do people come back to get their silver? So They started that one-tenth of the business that they got going, where they can write out, 10 times the amount of notes of what they're covering, and they've already started the debt system. It started thousands of years ago. This thing's been going on forever. The Bitcoins, in my opinion, is nothing different than that, because you're dependent upon other people. Yeah. You're dependent upon the trust of other people. You're given your names, like you say, and your information. I mean, there's all kinds of problems with it. Let's just go back to the Constitution, Article 1,
that.
Section 10. Hold on.
Yeah,
Article 1, Section 10, that no state... And we are going, this is something we will do a court case eventually on, but we have to, we have to move step by step. First, we have to get into the courts and win some cases and show that there's a conspiracy, by enemies, both foreign and domestic, at every level of government. And we have to constantly offer, the opportunity of repentance and fixing the problem and working with us. And if they don't do it, then we got to go after them. But Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution says that no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts. And that's it. And that solves all the problems. And they'll tell you, oh, there's not enough gold, there's not enough silver in the world. Of course, that's a bunch of baloney. Look, this is where we've got to go. And if we don't go here, then we're only going to continue to have this money problem. But we will get back here to this eventually, but that's in time. Do you have any other subjects to bring up?
No, that's all I want to say, that we have a bill of exchange and we have to focus on that, nobody give us any money. That's all.
Right. Yeah, we people don't see money. Anybody that is saving money or saving anything, they need to do it in silver. Forget the bonds, forget the dollar bills, forget anything saving in the banks, forget all the different things that are out there. Look at you get yourself safe and start putting up silver. And you don't get silver and let someone else hold it for you. You got the same problem again. You know, a lot of these places that sell silver, they offer you the opportunity for them to hold it for you. Yeah, try to get your, when everything collapses, you try to find those people. You know, good luck with that.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true. Thanks anyway. Thanks.
Okay, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Okay, let's take our next caller. Sue from Virginia, it looks like. Did we lose Sue? What happened? Oh, there she is. Sue from Virginia. Go right ahead.
Hi, my name is Kathy. I'm from California.
Okay, yeah. Kathy from California.
Hi. I want to contribute to you guys, but I don't have a bank account. So I went and got a money order, and I just need your name, what name to put on there, and the address, so I can send it to you.
Well, that would be National Liberty Alliance, and if you go to the site, nationallibertyalliance.org, on the top right-hand side, you'll see the donate button. Just click donate.
I know, but I don't have
when you go there... Yeah, when you go there, at the bottom of the page is an address. It's National Liberty Alliance.
Thank
you. And it's 3979 Albany Post Road, Suite 107, Hyde Park, New York, 12538. But that's right there on the website. Just click on and go to the bottom of the page.
All right, thank you very much. All right, bye-bye.
Okay, appreciate it. Thank you. And by the way, again, we are in desperate need of money. This month's bills were $1,500 short, and I had to reach into my own pocket to pay those bills. You know, we've been operating since 2013, actually further, longer than that, but we've been National Liberty Alliance since, what was it? It was, we turned to National Liberty Alliance, I think, in December of 2012. And so we've been operating for quite some time. And in the beginning, for the longest time, I funded and a few people helped here or there. But we've started to get a lot of people given $5. At some point, we were collecting enough money to pay the bills. But now we're not making enough money to pay the bills again. And I'm kind of being stuck with it. And I'm running out of my own funds. I'm retired. And so I'm using my own savings to keep this thing going. We need help. So anybody who can give $5 a month or more is very well appreciated, or even a one-time gift occasionally, that's fine too, whatever people can do. Okay, next caller. Did someone hit the button? Is that Kathy from California?
I thought you hung up. Sorry.
I'm sorry, that's it?
Yeah, that was it.
That was you who was just talking. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Take the next caller. Thank you. Okay. Next caller looks like, I don't know the name, 253 area code. Is that Jenkin? Willis or something? Let me see.
That's a Skype address. Willis Jenkin.
Oh, well, I lost. You know, there's something wrong with this platform.
California,
are you watching
Fred.
That? How you do? Hang on one second, Fred. Have you noticed that the person on the regular way that this thing works, Jen? Have you been watching the board?
Yeah.
That when you hit the button, they fall away, but then I see them on the left side.
Well, if they're still there, if they've been talking, they'll stay there for a certain length of time after you move on.
Okay. All right. Go ahead, Fred.
Yes, sir. I have a couple questions. Number one is you're aware now of the website at the White House where we can submit petitions that Trump will look at. I'm wondering if National Liberty Alliance should formulate some petitions for a redress of grievance about constitutional courts.
We are going to do that. Absolutely. We're going to be working. We're hoping to be working with the Attorney General here because the Attorney General's job is to work out this problem in the courts. After all, he ultimately is the law enforcer, particularly of the courts, what's going on in the courts, and the prosecutor. You know, he controls all the U.S. attorneys, and he's supposed to be making sure that these judges are obeying the law, and if not, we need to prosecute them. So we're going to be working, hopefully, with that attorney general and whatever U.S. attorneys as prosecutor that he gives us to work with, in this case, in Albany. And we will be talking with the president through informations. Everything we do will be recorded in the court. So it's not just recorded and we're sending them something and someone gets it and reads it. No, we want the president to read it. He said he wanted to read it. He said he is reading it. We hear this secondhand, of course, not directly from him. We have not had direct dialogue with the president, but we have had, information flow with the president, and he has asked us for more papers. That was a while back, but we do everything in the court, okay? And we're going to do exactly that. We're going to do it in the court. What we're fighting for is a Article III court. Let me tell you. A little earlier today, Brent brought up the FISA courts and some other courts, I guess, that are out there too. There's no constitutional authority on the federal level for such a court, not on the law, not as far as the land is concerned. That's the only court authority that was given the Constitution was to create the United States Supreme Court and then all of the necessary inferior courts, okay, which brings us into the federal districts. No other courts have been given. Of course, there's the bankruptcy. That was given authority also. There's the bankruptcy court and a few others. But there's nothing else outside of the constitutional courts. A court of law and a court of judgment, a court of law ultimately, is the Article III court. And any court out there that's operating under a federal district must be an Article III court. The problem is we've been hijacked. We are going after these people who are enemies of the state. They're enemies of the people, enemies of the Constitution. They've made war against us, and they're all involved in a great conspiracy, and we need to bring them back under the law of the land. And all we need to do is start – we just need a couple of wins right here. Just one win really will give us. If we can get one win in a court here in Albany, just one, on any of the cases we put in – and one indictment, and we can get the prosecution on that one indictment, game over, because every other case behind it will just bring – they'll fall like dominoes because they cannot defend themselves, and they're either going to repent and do the right thing, and they'll escape our wrath, or they will try to fight us or run, and we'll get them, and we'll put them in jail because they built all these jails. We're going to want to use them for something. After all, there'll be empty buildings when we get done with them, won't they? You know, I think if people go to jail, they need to go to a county jail because they need to be close to their home. They need to be brought back into their community. They need the connection to their family, their friends. They need, you know, counseling. If we have to put someone in jail, we have to truly do something to try to bring them back into society. You can't put them in a box and lock them up like an animal for 10 years and you beat them up and leave them in coal cells and treat them like a piece of crap and kick them and don't feed them and throw them in the dark holes for a month at a time and expect them to come out and act civilized. It's not going to happen. You know, I knew someone when I was a kid. I remember there was this mean, nasty dog. I mean, this dog was just a man hater. You couldn't go near this dog. The owner was the only one. And this dog was just locked up in a pit all night long, and the stories that we hear anyway. And it was, you know, the owner just abused this dog, but then it ran the yard. You got into that yard, you were torn to pieces. It was just a wild, nasty, mean animal because it was trained that way, you know. And that's what we're doing with people when we throw them in prison. And when you get people that haven't even done a violent crime, and you throw them in a prison like that, after a while, they become violent because they got to protect themselves. So we have the same problem. But anyway, we'll put the judges in there so they can figure it out. Fred?
My question, sir, was about the petitions.
We were petitioning the president now. Yeah, it
I
just
understand,
did go
around, sir.
Around the turn there, but go ahead.
They're looking for 100,000 people. Now there's all kinds of petitions in there. My question was, should we get involved in the petitions at all,
if people want to do that, I think they should. I mean, you know, as an individual, National Liberty Alliance, that's not what we're going to be pressing forward with. We want a petition for redress of grievances, and I presume that's what you're talking about. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, sir.
Or
that's,
is this a petition?
That's a whole,
yeah.
Please let me start over so I can clearly get this idea across to you so you understand. On the White House website, they've got a place where you can contact and leave an email for the presidency, okay, to contact the president through this email. And you can post a petition. Now, so far, the left side, the wing nuts, have already started petitioning for Trump's removal. Now, they've got 100,000 people signing up for that. That is the key thing, 100,000 people. So they're on the drum roll. That's Obama in his bunker. Fine, great. What I'm asking you is, should we as National Liberty Alliance start with an awareness through National Liberty Alliance and every other patriot group like the NRA, for instance, and start petitions through that channel so it's a public message from people across America to hammer home that the people want some changes and we specify them there, because that's what Trump is doing. He wants to hear from us, the people, and then he's going to respond.
Okay. Well, that sounds like it's getting onto the political side of things, which, not that we're not involved in the political side of things, but without the politics, of course, because the other side, the National Liberty Alliance has two sides. People have only been learning and hearing about the one side. We started off on the committee man side, the political side. We've come to so many bumps in the road and a dead wall, and realize that we're not going to get anywhere. We went into the courts to try to take back the power and the authority of the people into the political process, and we found out that the courts were corrupt, and that's why we ended up moving to where we are now, and we started to educate ourselves in this area. And so we do intend on doing things like that, but look, we are limited to the leadership that we're building. And until we get to a point where we can start the political process again, we will. Now, what we are doing is working with the committees of safety. And now we do have Robert, I know is on the line right now, and he's listening, and he is the national coordinator for the committees to make sure that the committees of safety are moving across the nation. And that's something we can drive down. Maybe Maybe you can give a call to Jan, or, well, Robert. Isn't Robert's number up there on the national, on the directory there, Jan?
John, I have already...
Yeah, hold on, hold on. Hold on 1 minute. Hold on 1 minute, and I'll let you talk some more. But, Jan, isn't Robert's number up there? And if it's not, you can call Jan, and Jan will connect you with Robert, and we can start a movement through the... through the committees of safety, and that's the political realm right on the grassroots, okay, because that's where that has to work from, in my opinion. I don't want to bring it here at this point because, you know, we want to stay in the judicial process as far as our conversations are going and trying to win back the nation through the courts, because that's the only way it's going to be done. Again, you know, once the people have power of the court, they have the power of not only indictment, but they have the power of conviction. So we can immediately do anything when these people break the law. Now, as far as petitioning the president, we are petitioning the president in a different way. If you go to our page and you highlight grand jury and you click on docket, you will find that paper number 1008-01 is a paper to the president for a redress of grievances, okay? And we also have also two other papers right before that, 1006 and 1007. And that's a redress of grievances to the Supreme Court and a redress of grievances to the Congress. And they have 60 days to answer, and they're about almost up. So we are working on that, but what we're doing is in the courts.
I need to say some things. Okay, I contacted Ollie through the ham radio thing the other day. And what this is all about is Ollie is setting up news at National Liberty Alliance. He's in the process of doing that now. Now, with the news, okay, as soon as we become a...
We could do it there.
Listen, please listen. As a news source, instantly, that would give us a link on Drudge that people could click, NLA for news and courts.
I agree.
NLA,
yeah, we could do
NLA
it there.
NLA is,
I mean,
mute. People don't know about NLA. They get on these Monday night calls or Wednesdays or Thursdays, whatever, and it's just a very small group because the message is not getting out there. You've got to make it easy.
Well, that's true, but you
got to
understand. You got to understand.
NLA.
You have to understand. It is true. I mean, we got thousands of people.
I get it.
Yeah, but okay, but let me articulate for those who don't then. You know, we have thousands of people. We have thousands of people that are members, and we only have hundreds of people that are really involved. That's true. Actually, we have a lot more than that. People have become involved and went to sleep. So we have that. A lot of that has been happening over the years because people, they don't have the patience. We have not been taught patience. Patience is something you have to work out yourself. It's, to begin with, patience is a virtue, which means it's a gift from God. It's not something that people are normally born with. And even if they're born with it, it's a gift from God. And that's rare. I've discovered that in my life. I've met very few people with patience. Everybody wants everything very quickly. And, you know, the media teaches us and reinforces that idea, you know, of immediate success, immediately. You have to have be rewarded immediately. So patience is something that people lack and we have to work on. But the bottom line is we do have what's called the Welcoming Committee. And the Welcoming Committee is making phone calls not only to the people who are new coming into the into our International Liberty Alliance, but also are going back all the way to our entire membership to try to kind of get people back in. And we're starting off with the leadership roles. We do have leaders in every single state. We have a tremendous amount of state coordinators. We have tremendous amounts of county organizers. I mean, if you look on the right-hand side of our website as you come in on the front, and this is on every page, you can see how many members we're coming up to the 6,000 mark in membership, but we have 1,279 county coordinators. We have 94 state coordinators. You have the county organizers and 94 state coordinators. We have 111 federal district leaders, and we have 12 national coordinators. Now, all of those people are not active, but at one time or another, they were, okay? And that's what we're doing now, because we knew this is what would happen anyway. We've been working again for 7 years now, trying to build up this member. Has it been 7 years? Let me think. 13, 5, 7, 8, 19, 11. Yeah, I guess about 7. Has it been 7? 10? No, not quite that many years. 5 years. Actually, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 5 years. So we're on the fifth year right now, 2017. So in 4 years, we have accomplished quite a bit. We've built a good membership. We've got people in and out involved. We've created a structure. And the whole thing, everything that National Liberty Alliance is doing is working to do one thing, and that is to create the most powerful position amongst us. And that is down in the county level, to get the county organized, to get 4 administrators, 4 in every county, because those are the positions, that's where the rubber meets the road, that's where the grassroots is, that's where the control of the courts is. And also at the same time, by building the county organizers, we're also working also on the committeeman process, and therein is the committees of safety, which will eventually morph back into the committeemen and take that back under the control. So the whole structure has been working that way. So that's what we're working on. Now, we did start to create this system where we got a regular news station that's going to be going on, and we're working with that. Ali's working with that with Gerard and a few other people. Gerard will probably be the one of the main speakers on the news program. And at that point, yes, definitely, I think that's exactly where we need to go there. Not only judicially what's going on, but politically. We have to start pushing down those roads. Go ahead, Gerard.
I have a question. I think there's something about this 100,000 people. I think Donald Trump is looking for a mandate of the people, and there's some kind of law that says that if a petition comes in and it has 100,000 of the people's signatures, then he has to address it. And I think what he's looking for is a mandate of the people. So I think what Fred is asking is, can we help boost, can our membership boost the numbers on that petition by sending people there to sign that mandate? You know, you could put a petition in. You know, I mean, we have a petition in the court which is much more powerful than what Donald Trump.
And my answer to that is, I cannot have, and I don't have the time to spearhead that. And I was really trying to really push that over to you. If you didn't notice, I really circled right around to you.
Well, look,
spearhead that with Ali and
right.
And Robert. So, Robert is an important part of this whole thing here, because Robert, if you want to get to the membership here, you want to work with Robert, because he's working down onto the grassroots, and also with Ron, who's working on a welcoming committee. And of course, Jan will be more than happy to send out the necessary information in our newsletters informing the people of this situation, if we can explain it right, because the way you just explained it, Gerard, is the way it needs to be explained. Someone needs to do the research. First of all, someone needs to do the research to understand exactly what this is, and
right.
Then be able to articulate it in a couple of paragraphs. And
like
we need to do a news story on a page on our website, and then Jan can send out the newsletter. Ron can incorporate this into his welcoming committee conversations when people get the call from him. Robert could be working on the grassroots level, on the committees of safety, pushing it down that way. And Gerard, you could be pushing it onto the news programming. And then we have the investigative committee that can also work to help to assist on investigating, to get the story, to make sure that we get it right and accurate. So there's a lot we can do. But, you know, I'm not going to – I don't have the time personally to spearhead.
But my short answer to Fred is that if he's put this out there and the other side's trying to use it against him by putting stuff in there to impeach him, you see what they're doing, yes, I think this NLE News is going to be very popular. I think people will go there looking for the news.
Yeah.
We're also going to post it on YouTube. It will become a very – popular place to get the news, you know, if we do it right, you know, and yeah, we will announce, yeah. We will tell people on our news blurb, because we'll do a daily news thing. We'll say, look, people, get to the Trump website and sign the petition thing, you know, because we don't want them, you know, out trumping us, so to speak. No, go there and participate in that. So because the side that's going against Trump, they really don't have a mandate of the people. It's a lie. They are a minority. They are not the majority. They're just noisy. They make it look like they have a lot of people.
And a lot of them get paid for doing what they're doing.
They're paid. Paid opposition. So, yes, Fred, we will announce that, and we will push that on our news. That's the short answer for that particular thing. Now, whether or not we would throw a petition on there, I think John has answered that. I won't go there. But
individuals, that would be excellent for our members to do as individuals, not as NLA, but as individuals.
Right. And I think that's what John was saying to Fred. But, yeah, I think it's a good thing to help him. If he needs a mandate of the people, we certainly can announce and say, look, go to the Trump site and participate in that particular endeavor that he's doing.
Yeah, I think there's two things here that we're kind of missing. And the first is, like Gerard kind of alluded to, we can put a petition on there if we like. That's what it's for. And if you get 100,000 signatures within 30 days, I think it is, it goes to the president, he looks at it. Okay, the second thing is we can keep track of everything that Trump says. We have his weekly news release that's on the website, and we get the briefings daily and so on. And when he starts going off half-cocked and he's not doing something that we feel is good, like with this asset forfeiture, which he's all in favor of, we could then go ahead and ask our people to please send emails, because there's another site there, and it's in the newsletter the last couple of weeks, that you can send him your druthers on to and add a little comment to explain what it is you would like him to do or you dislike what he's doing. So that's another avenue that we could make an impact on him.
That's right. And if he does, and that's the other thing we'll use this news site for, like what Jan says, when he does something that we don't like, we're gonna broadcast that too. Hey, Donald, you know, we're the NLA. We represent X many thousand members and many more people that come to us, and we don't agree with your Attorney General's view on asset forfeiture. You know, you should fix this because that's one of the things we, the people, are not happy with. And I think it'll work. I think that he will take notice of that. I think it's going to be pretty powerful once it takes off.
Well, it can make us very powerful by doing it.
Absolutely. It works both ways. Absolutely.
Yep. And I think this is something that's going to pick up heavily in the Liberty groups. I went to one of my Liberty groups here in Dutchess County, which I hadn't been there in a while. I don't get there too often because I'm so busy here. But I did go down to the meeting this weekend. And the people who really are the movers and shakers, of course, are the ones that show up. And they were very, very excited about Trump's election. I mean, everybody felt so positive. Everybody felt that this was the guy that's going to really, you know, put America back on course. But again, we the people, we also all agreed that we still have to stay active on the grassroots level. We have to push up and we have to do what we have to do, whatever it is that we're doing. But everybody needs to get behind on the political force and doing things of this nature. We all have to get behind and push there a little bit. And all of us really have to also get behind what's going on in the courts. We have to get that back and push there also. We got the spearhead in the door, but we need more shoulders to help push that door open and get that drive that spearhead in and get the head of the dragon, so to speak.
But, well, by us getting involved enough to tell our membership about this, it can help those people in membership get more involved with what we're doing elsewhere, too.
Right, and most of them are all involved, I'm sure, to some degree on their local Liberty groups, and so that'll spread it even further. So again, Fred, if you want to get more involved in trying to articulate exactly what needs to be said in a couple of paragraphs and try to get that, you know, to particularly to Jan, really, and then work with Robert if you want, and Gerard will also pick it up once we get the news going. You know, we got news bloggers we're trying to get going. We need to spark them up. Hopefully I'll be meeting with some of them this week and see where they're at and get a report to understand when we're going to start getting blogging going on our website. You know, we have been putting a lot of information on our website in the news. I don't know if people have been noticing it. I've mentioned this up before. If you go to our news page, highlight the word news up on the top. We've got the every White House briefing that has happened since Trump took office is in there, with the exception of today's. There's one today, and I didn't get it up there yet. I haven't listened to it myself. I'll get it up tomorrow. We have the president's weekly address. We've got a couple up there. We've got Trump in the news, a lot of stuff that's been going on. Whenever he gives a speech anywhere or gets involved, we've got that up there. And we also have information on lawless government. We have different stories and different things in there. And so we try to keep that up to date as much as possible, as much as we can find and get. So anybody who wants to come to a one place to get all the news on what's really going on and what this president is doing, just by checking these pages every day, you'll find a couple of videos every day, and you get the news right from the horse's mouth, you know. Let's hear, you know, we don't want to hear what Trump said from some secondhand information. We want to hear what Trump said straight out, and we want to hear what's going back and forth, you know, as a conversation with those people involved. And that's what we're trying to get out there. Once we get the TV going, you know, it's going to be really, I think, dynamic, and it would be great to be able to be listed over in what's his name? What was that big news guy's name on the on the internet here? Begins with a D, I think, that Fred mentioned.
Drudge?
All right, anyway.
Drudge
report. Yeah, there it goes. All right, Fred, do you have a final comment before we move on?
Yes, that would give us a link on the Drudge. A lot of people visit Drudge, and if NLA was there and it was court news where you have the wall of shame where these certain courts are not obeying the law of the land. And if you had, like, where their favorite tactic is, if you lose with the IRS, you become Willie Nelson, coast-to-coast television coverage. But the people that win, their court cases are sealed, so no one can figure out what they did.
Yeah, they don't know. I agree. We're trying to change that, obviously.
That's where the news can pull out victories for people, even the ones that are man on the land, people that win.
Well, I agree. And I think what we're doing in the courts right now, we're going to have some stories that I think maybe can be picked up there. But remember, someone's got to call Drudge and get his attention to look at us. You know, people call me all the time, and if I, you know, responded to everything that people ask me to do, hey, you should do this, and you should talk with this person and try to get that, you know, and these are cold calls. I mean, who am I to call anyone to talk to them to tell them anything? Look, it's up to you and the people out there to do that, to get a hold of Alex Jones, to get a hold of Drudge, to get a hold of all these different
people. I've tried.
I know. And we keep on trying, and we'll try until we succeed. And that's the way it is. That's how it works. And once they get an interest.
As soon as we become news, Drudge will put a link for us.
Well, look, I'm getting ready to send a copy of these papers to the New York Times and numerous other places. Not that they're going to pick up the story, but, you know, look, at some point they got to pick up the story. After all, we're going in with a major lawsuit on the gun issue here in New York. And I'm going to tell you, when we win the gun issue here in New York, because they can't defeat it. They can't. Look, this is another reason why we have all these other cases going on. Because once we put Judge... Hold on. No, this is important. I'm
you
glad
listen to this. Down. If you want to get through to some kind of media, I'm going to suggest you take it to the Inquirer and the other rags, because they love to tear down these establishment newspapers.
Look, we have someone else working for us that's going to accomplish everything that's necessary to be accomplished, and that's God. We got to ultimately rest in him, because if this is going to be successful, we got to get into the news. And if we're going to get into the news, he's going to set the stage for that, so we don't have to worry too much. And people out there are going to do what they got to do, and we do have people working commenting on this. We have people making a connection with the Sheriff's Association, for instance, out in another state, out west, southwest, so to speak. And we'll talk to those people. At first, it was brought to me that I should call them, but that's a cold call. You know, if they're interested in us, they need to call me. And right now, I think there's working in the background trying to set that, arrange that meeting up. But let me tell you something, because this is bringing me full circle to something that people need to realize and understand, because it's part of our strategy here at National Liberty Alliance. And that is, one of our most important cases is the Second Amendment case that we just filed. Okay, we just filed that case last week, and we served last week to all these people, and they've got 60 days to answer. They think they have 30. I mean, it's really dumb, but we'll let them think they have 30. But in any event, we have all these other cases that we're ready to bring in. That's why we want to open the floodgates also. You see, there's another reason why to work with these mortgage problems, because this is where we beat up the judge. This is where we put the judge in his place. This is where we make him a defendant and bring on the next judge if they want to play judge, because they're really magistrates and they need to behave as magistrates and they need to stop with their summary judgments. They don't have the authority to make a judgment over the people, okay, unless the people give them the authority to do so, or unless your case is under $20. Other than that, they don't have the authority to make a judgment over us. So the bottom line is that this one case is so important that once we start to win these little cases, and one of these judges try to throw this case out and we slap them back down, look, they can't do anything but default, because we're not going to permit a summary judgment. Now, we succeed in a couple of those, and now you have this Second Amendment case coming in. The judge already understands his place. He understands what we're going to do. He knows he's not going to be able to throw this out. And guess what? They can't answer. And if they can't answer, what happens? It's a default. And if they want to take it to the United States Supreme Court, I don't think that the United States Supreme Court will hear an appeal to hear this case, first of all. Second of all, they can't take it to the – well, they could if it's – well, maybe they couldn't even with a default. First of all, it's a court of record, okay? I never thought that one out on a default on a court of record. And I would imagine even on a default on a court of record, it can't go before the United States Supreme Court, you see? Because a court of record is final. The United States Supreme Court has ruled numerous times in a court of record they cannot make a decision. They can't overrule a court of record unless someone else's unalienable rights are being violated. Only then can they intervene. If somehow that's happened, and that has happened from time to time, of course, a jury has violated someone's unalienable right, caught in the crossfire or something. And usually that happens because the judges and the prosecutors have been sticking their fingers into things and violating these juries. And that's why that happens, generally speaking. I don't think it would happen. But in any event, I haven't thought that one out. In a court of record, if they default, can the United States...
A default is the same as a win, John. It's assumed that you get everything
right,
you ask for.
Absolutely.
Because silence is acquiescence, and you won, just like if the jury said you won.
So it's a slam dunk. And guess what that means? This is a federal court in New York State. And New York State is a very important place to win a case, because what happens here at a federal level is going to affect every state across the union. And let me tell you, we will go to any state and file the necessary papers on behalf of the people of that state that won't adhere to the law of the land through the federal court ruling here, through the default that's going to take place. You know, and these people are so dumb. It's pathetic. It is so pathetic. And I'm glad they're that dumb, because darkness is ignorant. They can't argue anything in the light. They can only do their dastardly deeds in the dark. They cannot operate in the light. So that's why they're dumb. And, I mean, we're dumb, too, until we realize we shouldn't be and become educated. And once we become educated and we start to realize and understand how these things work and become involved, we can win every single time, because we'll win on the merit of the case every single time. They can't answer our papers.
John, we know what New York State judges think about the falls. They think that they can go back in, and if they determine that you there was no merit to the case to begin with, that they can overturn it even though there is a default. But that's a matter of training that judge, that he doesn't have the power to make that judgment to go back in.
Right. And then they're going to have to find a judge that thinks he's going to come in and not find himself as a defendant for conspiracy, because that's where we're going to bring it every single time. We're going to make them a defendant by joining into the conspiracy and become, you know, again, warring against the Constitution, warring against the people, and not obeying the law of the land. Period. They can't argue. There is no argument here in logic. There's only argument here is the argument of lies. That's all it is. And, you know, how dumb are we when we really look to see what they've taken away from us? They controlled the First Amendment speech. I was watching today where this conservative group, the college, some college or something, has turned this conservative group and is kicking them out of the college arena of discussion. And I think they were on I'm not sure what news media they were on. I think they were on Fox or something. But, you know, I saw this on YouTube. And how dumb are we? How dumb are we that we're going to get away with these things? How dumb are we? We got to get a license to be married. And if you don't get their license, I mean, you don't need a license to be married. You only need a contract. That's all you need. And then consummate the marriage and it's over. Well, why do you need the government to get involved in the middle of that whole business? We don't need a license to get the news out. We don't need a license to have a weapon and defend ourselves. Are you kidding me? My daughter, who is now turning 21 now, I couldn't give her I wanted to give her a little bottle of mace so that she can, you know, one of the little things you stick in a pocket to protect herself. In New York State, it's against the law. As a matter of fact, even mace itself, I think, is a problem. I mean, you could buy it, but anyone under 21, it's a problem. They made it illegal, you know, so it's illegal to protect yourself, to protect your children. How dumb are we, you know? We're waking up to this. Here we are.
John, right, I want to ask one more quick question. Trump signed an executive order with the Waters of America Act, taking away that stuff, the fines and such. He called it ridiculous. Did that gentleman get out of jail, or is he still in jail, and are they still prosecuting him, or do you know?
He's still in jail, okay. He's already, let me think about this, he's already been prosecuted and found guilty from their eyes. Recently, well, I don't want to get discussion into the case right now. I can't talk about the case, but no, he's
under appeal. Nevertheless, he's under appeal.
Yeah, matter of fact, maybe we should send a letter to the president concerning this. I'm going to put something together this week for him.
Yeah, he should just go and pardon him and get him out and stop the baloney, because this is ridiculous. Right. This is a no-brainer.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, look, with that, we have to end our program for the night. Appreciate everyone coming. And listen, we got to get involved. We got to stay active. We got to bring more people in. Everybody's got to put their time in, an hour a week or more. Everybody needs to give this necessary financial support. There are very few people who are in a situation where they can't give anything, but there are some people who can't because they don't earn enough. They're on Social Security and so on. But most people can afford $5 a month. So please, if you can afford $5 a month or more, let's get that in and keep this program going, because, we will continue, but we're going to have to start taking some things down. You know, right now, one of the first things I think may have to go is the fax machines. We got 8 fax machines. They haven't been running lately, but we're planning on turning them back on. And we're paying a bill right now for 8 lines coming in. And we spent thousands of dollars on the system to get it up. But to save, you know, about $400 a month, that's helpful, because we're running like $1,400-$1,500 bucks a month short every month. And I can't afford it any much longer. So I'm going to have to do some cutbacks somewhere on some of these things. And there's not too many places we can really cut back. You know, at some point, I just can't afford it. Then people spoke. They don't want to save the nation. I mean, but we'll continue to go forward as long as we've got a few bucks to keep things going and the lights on, so to speak. So please, let's keep this in mind. All right. Lord willing, we'll be back next week. We will be talking some more on the the mortgages, the tax foreclosures, the mortgage foreclosures, and we'll be talking a little bit about the habeas corpuses. I don't know whether we're ready to go forward with them, but we will be going forward, I think, with the others. We're also, I don't know, maybe next week we may look into a paper we've been working on concerning the difference between laws and statutes. It's very important to understand the difference. And if you don't get pissed off after really understanding what these people have done to make us think what law is when it isn't, then I guess you'll never get angry. But with that, good night. Thanks, everyone.
You